to the city council meeting for the city of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, May the 6th, 2014. It's currently 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight, the invocation will be given by, well, was scheduled to be given by council members of Apollo. So I'm going to call on council member Augustus, if you wouldn't mind, for the, oh, he has no voice. So, Mr. Crowley?
Sure, I'll do.
And then Mrs. Reese will lead us in the pledge.
Dear Father in Heaven, we're thankful that we can gather together as a city tonight to discuss issues important to our city, and we pray that Thy Spirit will be with us, that we can make decisions that are for the betterment of the city, and that we can be respectful of each other, and also that we may be guided to make the right decisions that'll help us going forward. And we are thankful for this opportunity. We say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, public comments. I do have two people that have signed up, but they are going to be speaking in for item number 12. So unless someone came in after I picked up the paper and wants to speak in public comments, then I'm going to close this part of the meeting. Did I miss anybody? Anybody wanted to sign up? Okay, very good. Public comments are closed. Now we have a public hearing. This is item number 4 for Cedar Hills Retail Center by AmSource. And that is located at 4800 West Cedar Hills Drive in our commercial zone. So, does anyone come to speak in the public hearing regarding AmSource? No? Okay. Public hearing is closed. Now, in our reports, presentation, recognitions area, this is not an insignificant deal, by the way, and so I want to spend adequate time talking about this. So Charles Lowe was hired a year and a half or so ago, and has done a tremendous job for our city in regards to our finances. And so there's an award that is given from the Government Finance Officers Association, and we have won the Distinguished Budget Award in the past, but we are now going to be awarded a certificate for recognition, a budget presentation to Finance Director Charles Lowe. And so this is a very important award for our city. It tells us that our finances are being handled in an extremely competent and well-done manner. So, Mr. Lowe, if you want to come forward, and if you would, and if you'd like to take a moment, maybe explain the significance of the CAFR, and so that everyone knows, and it's read into the public notice, because as I mentioned, this is not an insignificant award, and we really do appreciate everything that you do for our city and having done this. So I'm going to give this to you.
And can I add something while you're doing that?
Yes.
Just because I know Charles won't toot his own horn. In reading the presentation from the Government Finance Officers Association, they said that it was the highest form of recognition in the area of governmental accounting and financial reporting, and its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by a government and its management. And it says it demonstrates a constructive spirit of full disclosure to clearly communicate the financial story.
So this is rather heavy, but it's like not sure it'll hang in your office. Is there anything you would like to add to that? Take a moment if you
want. Some of the things over the year and a half that my staff and I have worked on improving the annual report has been related to adding a statistical section, which wasn't there before, which added almost 20 more schedules to the report that gives you a 10-year trends on a lot of stats that are interesting and helpful. And also, one of the things the GFOA requires with their really long checklist, it's almost 100 pages when you go through the checklist, is there's a management discussion and analysis in the beginning of the annual report, and it really wants you to really explain why things changed over time, and that's one of the things that I've been trying to do, is just help you understand why things changed and what's happening. And I think we have a great staff at Cedar Hills, and I'm grateful to be here.
Thank you very much. This is the second meeting in a row that I have failed to do something, and we need to go back and approve the meeting's agenda, which I forgot to do. So if a council member would like to approve or amend tonight's agenda, then I will take that motion now.
I motion that we accept the agenda as is.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion has been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay. So moving on then to our...
Real quick, I just want to thank Charles. I mean, absolutely. I think we need to give him a round of applause because he's done a fantastic job.
And so I hope our city really does appreciate how great of a job you do. We're in good hands. So consent agenda. We only have one meeting's minutes that we need to approve. This is for the April 1st, 2014 City Council meeting. Imagine you've had a chance to take a look at the minutes. So if someone would like to make a motion to accept the minutes, and I will entertain that.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motions and minutes have been accepted. City reports and business. I'm going to start from my left. So, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start off?
Great. Would like to report on our last meeting at the Timpanogos Special Service District. At the last board meeting, the board approved a rate increase beginning July 1, 2014, of 13.8%. That was voted on in order to meet debt obligations. They had a series of increases based on a study by Bowen and Collins. So another increase would be scheduled for 2017 of 2.3%, and they, again in 2020 at 2.3%. So that occurred at the last Timpanogos Special Service District meeting. T-ball registration extended this through this week. Soccer registration is open now for the fall, and that's a fall-spring registration. We have a golf appreciation day on Saturday, this Saturday. So let's make sure that the rain gods know that they can skip us Saturday. We want to have a great day out there. Governor Herbert has declared May as golf month in the state of Utah, and so it's fitting that that this is happening now. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Reese.
All right, there's a lot going on, so I had a lot to report. So the Easter egg hunt was a huge success from the YCC. This year, the YCC, the current YCC is complete, so Mayor Gigi and I presented awards to the YCC members at Lone Peak at their night of recognition, and we are very grateful for the time and effort they've put in the past year. I'll be working with the YCC advisor and staff member to interview candidates for the upcoming year YCC members. Family Festival Committee is very busy still. The schedule of events for the Family Festival is as follows. Saturday, June 21st is the American Fork Half Marathon and 5K, and we do our 5K in conjunction with them, so that will be this Saturday, the 21st. May the 23rd is the swim night at the Pleasant Grove Pool, and dinner will be provided by Macy's. Tuesday is the Firecracker Golf Tournament. Wednesday is our first annual community service project and will be assembling hygiene kits for women in Mexico. Friday is the one-mile fun run, the dinner and movie in a park, and the carnival, and then Saturday is the parade and carnival. The theme is There's No Place Like Home. Nathan Osman is going to be performing Saturday night at our family festival and kicking off our summer concert series. And then Herb Wilkinson is our grand marshal. And from a communication standpoint, we issued one press release, which was regarding the awards obtained by Charles.
Okay, thank you. I met with the county commissioners recently regarding SR 146, that's Canyon Road. We're going to be meeting again with them, hopefully within the next week, to talk more about ownership of that road, who should take it, and under what conditions. Mr. Bunker and I will be attending the Highland City Council meeting on the 20th of this month to make a presentation about our maintenance shed that sits in Highland property and annexing that into Cedar Hills. And I believe that's it. Mr. Crowley.
The Parks and Trails Committee, Beautification Committee met. I should say we had our service project on Saturday, and that went really well. We chose five families that might have some struggles that they're going through that we wanted to do service for, and each home had between 10 and 30 volunteers, and it went really well, and we were able to help them in the yards, and they seemed to be very appreciative of that, and it also just gave everyone a chance to serve others in the city and interact a little bit. It was really fun, and it was a very, very big success. The Finance Committee met, a limited number of us that were able to meet met in the last week also, and just discussed some of the changes to the budget that we'll probably discuss today. That's about it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Augustus.
Not too much to report. One thing did come up on North Point, and I will be getting further information to the council on this probably sometime later this week. There was one staff member that resigned after 20 years. He's made some allegations against some of the staff members at North Point, and so I'll be getting further information for that and bringing it to the council, just so that you're aware.
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
Planning Commission met April 8th on a special meeting. We'll be discussing tonight their findings from that meeting, recommendations, and also they met last week, and again, those items will be on this.
Okay.
We'll be discussing them today.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to our scheduled items. First item number 8 is a review action item on the decision survey. Mr. Bunker, you're presenting.
Mayor and Council, this item is was misprinted. There's not a review action. It'll just be a discussion and communication item. But wanted to go through the decisions survey, which is a biannual survey that the city completes in order to determine and get feedback from our residents on how they feel the city is doing. What the citizens are expecting, kind of the direction that the citizens would like to head with our city. This survey is intended to get that feedback and then be presented to the city council so that as decision makers, you can correctly assess and budget and determine the programming for the city. The last time we did this study was actually in 2011. We got off schedule just a little bit. We typically try to do the decisions survey process in opposite years from our elections because there is a cost to do elections. There's a cost to do our survey, and we like to have those be opposite years. So we are in need of a decision survey now. We've reached out to the Cicero Group, which is Dan Jones, and we have Kirsten Adams here with us tonight, and she can go through some of the project specifications, the assumptions, kind of the process that we will go through in order to get this feedback. So if you'd like to come up.
Hi. Okay, so first, I just want to address methodology of how we would administer this survey. We think that the best way to reach everyone in Cedar Hills that could take the survey is to employ three different methodologies. The first one is telephone, landline telephone. Telephone has the best response rates as far as survey methodology and very accurate location targeting. We can call specific households as we sample telephone. The problem with just relying on telephone is that not everyone has a landline, and we can't ensure that everyone's home at the time of day that we call. We can do callbacks to make sure that we get as many people as possible. And so we'll do telephone, and then the next method we want to use is email. For those who either don't have a landline or aren't home when we call, email has typically a little bit lower response rate, but the big advantage of doing email is that people can take the survey whenever they want, and we can reach people that don't have the landline telephones. So Cicero is planning on administering the telephone survey and the email survey. We also want to do postcard, which will be handled by the city. Postcards, basically we send out a postcard that has a URL to the survey, so anyone can log on and take the survey at their convenience. So with that, we can target every household in Cedar Hills. And it does assume that everyone can have access to the internet. So if they don't have access at home, going to a library, they could take the survey there. So those are the three methods that we think would best represent reaching everyone that would like to take the survey. We plan to get a response rate that would end up with about 300 interviews. We want as many as possible. But that would give us a representative sample. So the assumptions in the survey are that length would not exceed 7 to 9 minutes. After that, respondents kind of drop off in paying attention. We assume that Cedar Hills will take care of the postcard and that they will provide us with phone numbers and email addresses to reach residents. So that's all I have as far as
council members. Any questions?
Just for David, I know there was some concern that it was too lengthy, and so you asked. I know I got a request for some feedback. I sent you some feedback, and I think Daniel did as well. Did you get that?
I did, and so we will be incorporating that feedback into the final form of that, and then sending it back to the council. You'll see it again in its final form. So just for the record, it's very nice when our residents do give us an email address. We really appreciate that. We use the email address in many ways, as far as doing surveys like this or with like Parlant technology. If we have an emergency in the city where we can send a phone call out to a household or an email to let them know. For instance, right now we're doing some work on Sugarloaf Drive. There was a Parlant message sent out for that. So it's important to get the right information to the city if residents can do that.
I have a question. Is there any way to make sure that the same person does not take the survey twice?
Okay.
Through a different method or something?
Yeah. So when we create the survey, for every method that we're using, we'll create a unique password. So even if we contact them with two different methods, there's only one link that person can take. Okay. And so the survey will terminate if they've already taken it.
Okay. And I have a question for David also. I've reviewed all the questions. I had a few suggestions on them. Can I say them now, or do you want me to email them to you? What would you like?
Either way, if you want to email them, it'd be great so that we can get that on the list, but you can.
I'd like to say them now
great.
Also, if that's okay. Is everybody?
Perfect.
Okay. Question one. I feel like my number one answer is not on there, of why we choose to live in Cedar Hills, and that is, in my opinion, is it's family friendly atmosphere is number one for me. Number two is the good neighbors, and neither of those are on that list. So my top two aren't on there. So I'd like us to have something along those lines as a choice of why we choose to live in Cedar Hills.
Great.
Question number 13. After the city property tax would go down, add the words, well, the overall bill may not go down. I think there can be some confusion that that our city property taxes would go down if we outsourced. I'm trying to remember what the question is about now, but it has to do with outsourcing or taking out a line item from our property tax.
Okay.
And our total property tax isn't guaranteed to go down, just the city portion would go down without the city handling that. I'd have to look up 13 to tell you the rest of that. But question number 14, the bond will be paid for by the increase in rates more likely than savings realized for if we do a pressurized irrigation. I'm guessing that we may have to increase rates to cover the bond, but it made it sound like it would be covered by savings, and I'm not sure that we know that yet.
Right.
So I want us to make sure we word that in a correct way. And there's one that talks about how if we had a swimming pool, that it might be between $5 and $10 a month per resident. That's stated in the question itself, which can lead towards a particular answer that we want. I just want to make sure that we have some analysis that shows how we are getting to that $5 to $10 amount, because I haven't seen that yet, and I would like to see that, to see that we have some analysis showing that we could build a swimming pool for $5 to $10, because we are stating that in that question. And question 31 is in regards to development, which is part of the conversation tonight. And one of the choices says, would you allow a building that's five stories or over, but it doesn't address if you want to keep it at two stories. I think we could scratch the five-story plus, because I think most people would say they would be against that. But I think we could give one more option to keep it to two stories and just see what people would say about that on question number 31. Okay, so that's the end. That's all the suggestions I have. I'll email it to you, because I was a little vague on one or two of them, so I'll email it to you.
Great. Thank you. You got anything?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm kind of losing my voice, so bear with me. Back in 2013, when our 2014 budget was approved, I actually voted against our budget for this particular reason. Technically, I disagree with the decision survey. I think spending $10,000 for a survey to pull our residents to find out what they need is a pretty hefty expense for us. And $10,000 is not a small amount for our residents, because we're using taxpayer money in order to survey them. So they're spending money for their own survey. Like Councilmember Crawley pointed out a couple of times, we're asking very leading questions in a survey like this, which to me is skewing the results. It's not getting an unbiased or allowing the residents to give their own answers. I mean, we're in essence saying, okay, out of these four answers that we've already provided for you, which one do you most agree with? Which, yeah, I don't think is an accurate way to get a representation of our city. So I'm just going to go on record that I disagree with the decision survey, and I would rather us not do it, even though it is in the budget.
That's fair.
So I have a question then. Ma'am, if you wouldn't mind, is there a way to do a survey without having a set number of questions asked? Can you ask an open-ended question like Councilmember Guster is posing, where there's really not an answer that's being provided to them, they're providing their own answer?
Right. Yeah, we include open-ended questions in the survey. It affects the cost of the survey, because we have to go on the back end and code them, but it will give more unstructured responses. So that's definitely something that we could do. We would have to adjust the length and the number of questions to make up for that. But yeah, that's
very good.
Totally something that we
could do. And I'm looking at them. It looks like several, not all of them, but several of the questions do have an other field where they can have a free text answer.
Mm-hmm. And just as a follow-up statement too, it is $10,000, which comes to about $4 per resident. There are a lot of really heavy decisions that need to be made that I think, you know, the council would love to have an idea of how the residents feel. So I do think surveying is important. It is a little bit costly, but I think it is important as long as the questions aren't leading. And I think the best way to do that is really to vet the questions out. Like, make sure that all opposing parties are good with how things are worded, so that there's all sides have fair representation. So I think the key is making sure that everyone, that the questions are very well vetted before we send out a survey.
Though, to be fair to staff, I will say that this was given to council several weeks ago to make changes to wording. So.
And I've been out of town for several of those, so.
It's been.
So then. Some delicate encouragement then for the council members to, if you do see any questions that you consider misleading, address them immediately. Not right now, but very quickly. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Item number 9, which is a review action item. Mr. Goodwin, you're going to be presenting on the AmSource property.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Before you, what you have is the AmSource preliminary plans for review for your consideration. The property is located at 4800 West and Cedar Hills Drive. It's there on the corner. Proposal includes the construction of the American First Credit Union as well as two additional retail pads. AmSource has submitted the required studies to the city, and they have been to the Planning Commission, and they have paid their application fee. AmSource is hoping to break ground as soon as possible on this, and I'll get into that, and have the retail pads open for the coming holiday season, so they really want to move on this. There are a couple things that are of concern to the city, but staff has reviewed this project. One, and this isn't new, we've discussed this before, is the future public road that's on the north or on the east side of the project. It merges with from the east side of the AmSource project, and then eventually merges onto Cedar Hills Drive. The traffic study that AmSource submitted shows that this will be a heavily used intersection for the cars going in and out and frequenting the retail pads there. So a concern with the city is that with the level of service already declined on that property, by not constructing that piece of property, you decrease the level of service in the other intersections as you disperse that traffic through the other intersections. So we need to have a discussion on that road and what the council feels is necessary going forward as far as the construction of that road. Additionally, the initial proposal from AmSource showed, I believe it was 18% landscaping, which was not in line with our commercial guidelines for landscaping code. They've changed that, and they've come completely in line. They have, I think they're well above the 30% requirement, as well as their proposal matches what is currently planted down there in Hart's and in Walmart, showing some continuity between the various commercial parcels. So that was something that we were very happy with, we were very pleased with. The credit union has been improved. If you look at the elevation that was initially proposed versus the one that is being proposed tonight, you see that they went from a white brick on the initial proposal to a red, more colonial brick on the current proposal, as well as adding various elements to give it a little bit nicer feel. I feel they added on the top of the roof there. What's that called? What's that? Do you guys have a picture you can show? You don't have a picture? Yeah. You can see the architectural elements on the ridge lines, and as well as the columns leading into the entrance to the facility. We feel like they've done a much better job from their initial proposal of falling in line with the commercial guidelines. So that was something that staff was also happy with. The current plans for the AmSource, they want to have the retail buildings A and B open, I believe it was October 1. They want to have those open for the holiday season, as well as AFC would be constructed in 2015 as one of their projects. So with that, I would entertain any questions that I can answer, or I'd like to turn the time over to Bill Gaskell and Anderson Whalen.
Council member Zapala is gone, but he sent some feedback and wanted me to read that into the record.
Please.
So these are Councilmember Zappala's points. He said, I agree with staff recommendation that the access road must be constructed as part of this project. I would make any approval contingent on that happening. Two, I would like to ask the developer to make pedestrian crosswalks raised when they cross a parking lot. I see three on the site plan. Three, I would like to see trees lining 10,040 North, so the backside of the retail, as well as the access road that comes in from Walmart. Some of the latter is labeled future landscaping, but there are also sections that AmSource owns you could put in trees. Tree-lined roads greatly enhance the beauty of the site. Four, I would also like to see trees in the median between the credit union and the retail pads and on the northwest corner of the credit union pad by the crosswalk. Five, I would like to ensure that the colors and styles are a strong match with our guidelines and the bank and McDonald's across the street. I am not aware if this comes in preliminary or final approval. And then six, the traffic analysis indicates the left turn from Walmart onto Cedar Hills Drive going eastbound has a current level of C and will degrade to E. The left turn from the proposed retail going westbound on Cedar Hills Drive will be a C. I'm worried that this intersection will only get even worse and become an F once we have additional stores. We need to direct staff to consider how to handle this traffic moving forward. I think that was my big concern as well, is that intersection right there on Walmart and that proposed street that doesn't exist right now.
Yeah.
The traffic study, as I was reading it, let me pull that back up. On the conclusions or recommendations, it says that the traffic study shows the existing intersections and proposed accesses will continue to operate at acceptable levels of service with the addition of the America First Credit Union. But it doesn't really specify with the addition of these retail buildings how that's going to affect it. And so I'm wondering, are we going to need to install a traffic light there, or how are we going to accommodate all those cars trying to turn left back onto Cedar Hills Drive with that traffic pattern already being
A light has not been discussed on that. I think it's probably too close to the light that's already on 4800 West and Cedar Hills Drive. So I don't know that a light is an option at that intersection. But that's also why we feel like the future public road needs to be a part of the project. And that's simply because if you divert that traffic around, then you're decreasing the level of service to the 10,040 North Road that's on the north side of Hearts, as well as on 4800 West. So I think you'd want to have that traffic dispersed as equitably as you could, given that right now they only have a right-in, right-out, and a full access onto two full accesses onto the 10,040 North. So, but discussing how the intersection on the future public road will be affected, I think a lot of that determines on what the remainder of the commercial district looks like. Because what happens on the smart property and then what happens on the city's 9 acres could greatly affect what type of traffic we can expect and when we can expect that. So it really depends on, you know, what the future plans are for those properties.
But that's the thing, is on the traffic study, I don't see that being addressed for those two retail buildings at all either.
Yeah.
And I would think we need to know that.
Yeah, and I don't know that they can really address that it's not something that's really a known. I think they can address their own traffic, but even still, the level of service is concerning to the city. So, especially that left turn out of Walmart to go east onto Cedar Hills Drive. So,
my other question is, for those retail buildings, do we have any idea? Is there interest for those buildings right now, or are they going to sit vacant for a period of time?
My understanding is that there is interest right now, which is why they want to move really quickly on these.
And do we know what kind of interest?
I'm going to let them answer that. If you guys want to take that. Go ahead. This is Bill Gaskill from AmSource, by the way.
My name is Bill Gaskill, and I'm with AmSource. I'll just start with the questions you asked, and Jeff will come up and go through our full application. As far as the retailers, we do have interest, and that's why we would like to move forward. We have people on the table, including America First. Doing the credit union on the front of the property allows us to do the back of the property. We can't build buildings that are vacant or that don't have signed leases. So we have interest. We have not signed leases. We wouldn't do that until we had approval, because we don't want to sign a lease and then not be able to build the buildings because of one of the conditions. So I think once we got approvals, we would try and hurry up and get some of those done. But we are, we do have people that are ready to sign leases with us. And we would like to beat the holiday season. A lot of retailers have a blackout delivery of November 15, sometimes November 1, through January 30th. If we can't deliver the space before the holidays, they want to wait till after. So right now we can still meet that deadline, and that's what we're shooting for.
Okay. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
The larger unit, is there any chance that's large enough to be a restaurant, or whether if a restaurant wanted to move in, or is there real restrictions that would make it impossible for a restaurant to
It's not planned to be a restaurant.
Okay.
A sit-down restaurant, mm-hmm. for example, would be maybe 4,000 or 5,000 square feet.
Right. I was thinking more of a smaller, not quite a sit-down, but
yeah. The parking for the sit-down restaurant would take up the rest of the space. So, right. A sit-down restaurant would take the majority of the property. The food that is active are kind of multi-tenant, inline, the smaller restaurants, the fast casual, all those that you see out there right now, they're kind of going inline. The sit-down seems to be, I don't want to say a dying breed, but all the action and the activity is with the smaller guys.
Are you seeing any interest from any food-based companies like yogurt places or anything like that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's kind of
not a lot, mm-hmm. but enough that we think if we get some retail going, mm-hmm. we would probably take that smaller building and save half of it for mm-hmm. food.
Okay.
Just because we know that that's a priority that you guys want to see. Mm-hmm. So
I have a question with regards to, and am I reading this right, Chandler, is regarding the future possible road. Is this a condition for them? I mean, and how is the negotiation going with the Smart family, if that's the case?
Right now, it's not a condition. It's just something that is of concern to the city as we discuss this project, and I think it's always been a concern. One of the things that I've pointed out before is that this road is really a linchpin for the remainder of the commercial district. It leads into the Smart property as well as it leads into the AmSource property, and eventually it's the idea is that it leads to the Cedar Hills city property, and that's a main north-south corridor through the commercial property. So that's why it's from staff's point of view, that's an important road to have. And what was your second question?
I just wondered if there's any negotiation.
So right now it's not a condition. It's just a concern that the city's raised.
Mr. Geddes, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. So, and if I'm wrong, help me understand here, Bill, but your traffic study is based on that north-south road coming out of across the street from the Walmart, right? That stubbed-in area?
Yes.
That I think Mr. Geddes was just referring to.
No, I'm referring to the future road to the west.
So am I. I'm referring to a future road as well.
Same road.
And so, if I understood that correctly, there are no negotiations between you and the Smart family at this point, right?
No.
Okay.
There's a contract, buy and sell contract that's out there between Doug and the Smart family, and we're not a part of that contract. We don't want to step in and foul it up or get in the middle of it. And if something goes south, or we don't want to be a cause for
I understand that.
So, but no.
I think you always have to think about contingencies and plan Bs.
Uh-huh.
What if something does go south and that road is not in your property?
Right.
It's in the Smart property.
Right.
So how do we proceed then with your development if that road is in limbo? And what would your plan be?
Well, we tried to acquire the property before, and uh-huh. I believe the city tried to step in and also acquire an easement for the property. We are more than happy to acquire. It doesn't make sense for us to acquire the entire property just for that road. It makes sense for us to buy the road if it's required. If there was a different scenario of an easement that could be obtained right now that doesn't get in the middle of the contract, the existing contract,
If the road is required and we can't purchase the property, then we can't develop our property. Okay. So I don't know. I wish I knew of a contingency plan, but I don't know that there is an alternative if that road is a requirement.
Okay. So would it be prudent then to wait until things are resolved with Smart Property and Mr. Young before the city would authorize you moving forward?
I think that's your decision.
I understand.
Our decision
that
would be, we've done developments of this size and this nature and even larger without access, three access points. I don't know, and maybe Jeff can speak to the traffic study. I think that the way it came out and was describing those levels of service was not accurate. I'm not sure, but we've done more square footage in and around Walmarts and grocery stores and have not had 3 points of access. So.
Okay. I think I understand your position, which was that if there was not a consummation, if you will, on the Smart property, then you would approach the Smarts in order to purchase that land, and then it's up to those two parties to see if they can make heaven.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I understand.
And so, yeah, if there was not a contract, we would have approached the Smart family again. If the Smart family did not want to sell, I think we'd still be here asking you for approval of the project as is. And if that road is a requirement, then yeah, we'll have to put it on the back burner and wait.
Okay.
Put it on till next year or whenever something happens.
Yeah. Very good. That's all the questions I have. Anyone else have something?
Just a discussion. Suppose it only had two access points. And we did approve it. In between now and when something gets worked out with the Smarts, what are the disadvantages to the city with having two access points rather than three? Does anyone?
I think that's a great question. And actually, since Chief Freeman is here, I was hoping maybe he could come up and answer that for us. Because I believe it's mainly a public safety issue, isn't it?
Yeah, while he's on the way up, let me... We did meet with Chief Freeman on this, and if you look at Cedar Hills Drive, that's a right-in, right-out only, and actually their plan would include an island to force the right-in and right-out, which actually leaves 140 north on the south side of this project as the only access point for emergency personnel for fire and ambulance. They would be responding, the emergency personnel would be responding from the Cedar Hills Station coming west on Cedar Hills Drive, which would force them to go into the intersection and then turn south and then head back into the project on the south side. And so, Chief, you can...
So how does that affect your response times?
It obviously it makes response times longer, a little longer. The thing I'm concerned with is that island there for their main entrance coming from the Cedar Hills, like David said, from the Cedar Hills Station. That's the station will be serving that. If you look how we have to get in there, if we have to go down and make a U-turn, which is pretty dangerous, especially for a big truck, and then come back up and try to make it in that turn-in with the island there, with the island in the middle plus the island out in the road, that's pretty difficult, especially with a big fire truck. Ambulance, it's not so bad. Or we have to go all the way around and then come in, come off 4800, go through that intersection, lights and siren, and then come around and come up here. When I looked at the whole plan, it only makes sense that we have that main road in there where the island isn't, where we can just cut in there from an emergency standpoint. I don't know. I guess what road are you calling that there, David?
Doesn't have a
future
name.
Future public road.
future road or whatever you want to call it, yeah. That's a better entrance to that commercial zone, mainly because you don't have an entrance down on 4800 West into the property. You have to come in off that other, whatever that little road is by Hearts there. So I don't know if you have any questions.
How long will it delay your response time?
Probably about 30 seconds, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but in public safety, you know, we try to save two to three minutes. We build a station to save 2 to 3 minutes a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So I just think the overall look of this is, from a public safety standpoint, it's safer to come in that other way than have to make U-turns around those islands, especially if you have a high school getting out, you know, with the kids on the streets and so forth, trying to drive a fire truck around those U-turns and maybe come up on the sidewalk if that's the way they choose to go. I mean, it's doable, but it's not the ideal situation as far as road access goes. But
and it probably would be temporary, so it'd be longer response times.
Yeah, but temporary, when you're talking public safety, is a big risk, because it would only take one accident during that temporary time frame to cause a big problem.
Mm-hmm. I guess my personal opinion is I'm fine doing preliminary approval with that road as a contingency, but I think that if for whatever reason there's not an agreement with the smarts on building that road, then the council's going to have to determine how we're going to address that.
I agree.
Go ahead. No, thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chief.
Now that you're here, did you want to emphasize any of your points more? I just read them.
I guess
the street you're talking about.
Make yes. a little bit more of a plea. You know, if this were a state road, we have another project that we're doing that's on a state road, and UDOT is restricting access points to no more than 660 feet on this road. So there are a lot of busy roads out there where access. And there's actually a lot of cities out there that try and limit access into shopping centers. And we've got maybe less than 300 feet from Cedar Hills Drive down to the entrance between Hearts and this property. And that's less than half the distance of what we see in a lot of the grocery-anchored shopping centers. So I don't want to downplay the public safety, but we're still talking about one building that we're driving around, and it is less than 300 feet, and we see it all the time, larger than that, larger distance. So,
and I think, and I don't want to speak for everybody here, so chime in if you want to. I think our concern is that living here, we see that intersection, especially during school hours, gets very congested already. And so trying to turn left onto North County Boulevard, if you're heading west, you know, when school is starting, is a problem. And then if public safety, if that's their only way to get to that building, and there's this line of cars queued up to turn left, that makes it a little bit more challenging for them.
Yeah. And so if there was a way that we could, as part of our approval, if we wanted to quantify the cost of asphalt for that road and have us bond or put out escrow that money, if the city can obtain an access easement, we can construct that road, we can add that road, but we're just trying to move forward and keep things moving forward while we can. And we just don't have any ability right now to say we can provide that roadway. And I think if we put us off until that road happens, it may happen, and I hope it does. And we've met with Doug many times, and we'd love to work with those guys, but it's just out there, and we don't know what the timing is. And I think we just, this month, we'll hit our 10-year anniversary of owning that property, and we'd love to build some buildings there.
Right.
Okay.
I would like to just, trying to be creative here to help move this process along. I mean, public safety-wise, is it possible that we could create some sort of an all-weather road? It doesn't have to be paved, but could we get, you know, if we can work things out with, whether it's Blue Line or the Smart Family or whatever, would public safety be able to still use that if we could, you know, get an all-weather gravel road until, you know, the time is necessary? And that's my question.
Yeah, I was trying to be creative too, and I was wondering if perhaps at the right-in, right-out entrance, if we temporarily left out the concrete that's in the middle of that driveway, and then public safety could drive on the left-hand side of Cedar Hills Drive and turn into that entrance temporarily, and then once the road is built, put in the concrete that would block it.
Chief?
The only problem is I think you're creating a big hazard from other drivers also thinking that they could do that. Because if you don't have the right-in, right-out, then, I mean, theoretically, people could look at that and go, oh, I'm going to go around and do the same thing.
There's a fairly significant center median there. It would take a pretty unusual maneuver for someone to say, I want to turn in left there and go on the wrong side of the street for a fairly significant piece of time before they get in there, whereas a public safety vehicle has lights flashing.
Right. And the only reason I say that is because in our neighborhood, we had almost the exact same situation with almost the same distances involved. And I was almost hit head-on twice from cars doing that exact same thing. And that's why we actually had to go in. Our HOA spent over $10,000 installing two cutouts. They were $10,000 a piece, just so that we could avoid that problem, because we had very near collisions of cars thinking, oh, it's only, I don't know, 50 yards down there. Oh, I can make that really quick. And we had some very close calls doing that exact same thing.
We're not going to go down the wrong way in traffic.
No. Yeah.
It's our fault. We get head-on collision no matter what. So our guys will still go out and down.
Well, and I'm not so much worried about the public safety standpoint. I mean, because that is a risk, having you guys go all the way around. I'm more worried about the 16-year-old who's driving down the street thinking they can make it before the next car comes.
But I think what he's saying is it's not an option anyway, because they wouldn't take it anyway, even if it was.
Right.
Yeah, we won't go down the wrong way, because if, like I said, the same 16-year-old's not
right,
runs into us head-on.
It's your fault.
Just
right.
What about a temporary road, as Councilmember Geddes was referring to? Is that feasible?
It's possible.
Smarts would have to go along with it, right?
Yeah.
Another thought: if this building happened to be 30 seconds down the road further, would we say they can't build it because it's that 30 seconds further away from public safety vehicles?
That's the thing, is I'd like to see this get developed, and I don't want to put a bottom-up responsibility on AmSource for things that are completely out of their control.
Right, and I don't think we would. I don't think we'd say, oh, that's 30 seconds further away from the public safety building, so we're not going to let you build there. And it'd only be temporarily 30 seconds further away from the public safety. So that's, I think we got to keep things in perspective a little bit. That it's nice that it's that close to the public safety building, but if it was 30 seconds further away, we wouldn't say we can't build there because it takes 30 seconds longer to get there. Just a thought.
No, and I wish we were talking about any other problem but public safety, because if we were talking about anything else, this conversation probably would have been done 10 minutes ago. But it's because it's public safety, and it is a big risk to our residents that we're still talking about it, because it does affect everybody. So we have to be very careful with decisions like this.
We have to be careful, but I think we have to look at common sense and say we would still allow a building 30 seconds further away. But anyway, that's thought.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Zappala, you just got back. You wanted to add anything?
Yeah, I did want to just ask a few questions about pedestrian access and about landscaping. So for the pedestrian crosswalks where you show them crossing parking lots, is that possible to get those raised so that they actually also form a bit of a traffic calming for people going through parking lots, that they're aware that the crosswalks are there?
Which crosswalks?
So I'm referring to the one on the northeast corner, or northwest corner?
Northwest up
there. Yeah, as well as the one down below. And there's the third one over there.
Uh-huh. And so you would want additional ones where?
Not additional crosswalks. Is it possible to make them slightly elevated above the...
Yes, it is. The couple of the issues, this one is tied in with the ADA stalls, so we could look to shift those. We can only we have to be real flat in those areas for the wheelchairs and so forth, so we can't raise up and raise down real steep or anything for them. So we'd have to look at that option. This one through the middle here, I don't see any concern doing that one. This one is just for people going through the drive-through lane. So you're not going to have any speed issues, really, people turning, coming into the drive-through lane there. So usually when you have what we call a tabletop sidewalk, it's more for a traffic calming device to kind of slow people down, which I think this one makes a lot of sense for. Mm-hmm. And maybe even this one once the future road comes through. So we could look at a couple of those, yes.
Good. And then as far as landscaping, again, on that picture, I'm seeing lots of nice trees on a good portion of the perimeter, which I really like. I'm just wondering if we can also get trees on the side of Building B along 140 North.
Down in here?
Yeah. Okay. So that we have more of a tree-lined street. And then on the future public street on the side, I'd also like to see that tree-lined.
I don't see a problem with that. That's fine.
Those are my two main questions. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Reese, to answer your question on the traffic study did account for the traffic generated by the credit union and the two retail buildings. We projected those as in traffic world, they're just projected as what's called a specialty retail, which kind of covers a whole conglomerate of different types of tenants. So we did project traffic for them, so there is some traffic in there already for those buildings.
Okay.
In that traffic study.
Thank you.
Any other questions for council members? Okay. Mr. Gaskell, thank you very much. All right. So this is a review action item, and if someone so inclined, I'll entertain a motion on this.
I motion that we approve the preliminary plans for the AmSource property located at 4800 West Cedar Hills Drive.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
I would like to amend your motion to include directions for the raised crosswalk on the corner, as well as for additional landscaping on the streets.
I will accept those amendments.
Okay. Motion has been amended. Is there a second?
I'll second again.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion now? Okay. Let's have a roll call vote. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mr. Augustus?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, item number 10, which is a review action item on our fiscal year 2014 budget amendments. Mr. Lowe?
First of all, I'd like to discuss the current fiscal year. So we're going to go through some budget adjustments for the first fiscal year. The first item is an allocation of motor vehicle fee, delinquent taxes, and interest based on property tax rates. So we currently have a property tax rate set for our general operations, and we also have a property tax rate for our sinking fund or our debt service fund, which services the golf course debt service. In the past, we have allocated property taxes based on those property tax rates, but the city has not allocated motor vehicle and delinquent and penalties and interest amounts based on those same property tax rates. They have all gone to the general fund, which isn't correct. So we're trying to be in line with Utah code there. And the impact on this for this year and the next year, it makes the general fund budget tighter, and it requires less property taxes for the golf debt service going forward. The next.
So, Charlotte, real quick. So, instead of the general fund, where should it be going?
Golf debt service, the amount related. So, say we get $1 million overall. Every month, I get a statement. It just says property taxes, motor vehicle fees, delinquent taxes, interest. It doesn't say golf fund, general fund.
Okay. Even though it shows up on two line items on property tax statements, you don't receive it that way.
That's correct.
Okay.
So we have to break it out on our own. And it hasn't been done that way in the past, but that's not correct.
So explain to me why motor vehicle taxes, for example, would go into the golf.
Yeah. So motor vehicle fees are not distributed based on where you're from or what city. It's based on the amounts a governmental entity requests through property tax. So because if we didn't have a golf debt service levy, we would be getting that portion less in motor vehicle fees. So if another city requests a property tax increase, they're going to get a higher portion of motor vehicle fees. Has nothing to do with what city you're from.
Oh, okay. And so because we actually have a bond where we dedicated property taxes to pay for the golf fund, then we need to allocate. And that's a state law that we have to do this way.
Okay. The next item is revenue adjustments. In our budget, we had a pretty conservative revenue budget because of the city's pretty built out. We had some growth in the Bridgestone area due to some 8-plexes and 4-plexes that meet our building permits and planning checks and that kind of stuff, higher than the normal housing permits would bring in. We also added an emergency management grant that we get from the state, which the city didn't have before. Along with the construction, we get additional impact fees. So all those adjustments have been made. And so that's what the next line item is. We just had a lot of revenues. Most of them are restricted, so it's not money that can be spent on anything. It's mostly has to be spent on its restricted purpose, whether that's parkland, streets, or what, or sewer, or water. The next line item is we had a lot of changes in events and rec programs and our staffing. At the couple of months into the fiscal year, we went from a full-time staff events person to a couple of part-time people. We also never had a park reservations line item, so we added that. So that's another item, and that's why that item got added. The event center, this Vista Room, has been much busier than the year before, so the revenues have been much higher than anticipated, but also the supplies for the linens and everything that goes into putting on an event have been much higher, and the maintenance of the building has been higher, and the cleaning has been higher. So So there's been a lot of adjustments that way. The final adjustments.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
On that? This is really more for David. Now that we've had a year with increased usage of the BIST room, could we get an accounting for how that's doing in terms of break even?
Absolutely.
Can you say that again?
A what?
We couldn't hear
just wanted
you
another here. Accounting now that we've had another year with the BIST room and we've had higher usage for it, but also higher expenses, if we could get a full accounting for where we're doing.
Kind of a profit loss.
We are about...
The idea was that we would have like this great resource of revenue coming.
We are about break even.
Yeah.
Right now. We are about break even. Last year, we were subsidizing the events. When you include utilities and building maintenance and items like that. If it was a governmental service like, you know, public works, we don't include cleaning the bathrooms under public works department budget. So if you were just talking about staffing salaries and the materials they use, then there is a profit they're bringing in. But if you think of the cost of the whole building, which we have no matter what, whether we use it or not. But with that, we're about break even on events.
Did you skip over the garbage fee on purpose?
The garbage fees, no. We can talk about the garbage fees. I've just been scanning through this. So on the garbage fees and recycling fees, that went up higher than we anticipated, and I really, for second garbage cans and more, the price went up to incentivize recycling, and some recycling has gone up, but there's still, there must be a lot of people using second garbage cans still. So.
Charles, on 1065-300, where you say rec expenses, fitness classes had a $28,000 increase, is that offset then by the revenue that came in? It should be a wash, right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. With the golf fund itself, there was a couple items that we thought would make utilities go down. One was we thought with the new golf carts that they would save less money on electricity because the old batteries required a lot more charging. I don't know if it's because we're busier, but we haven't really realized a lot of utility savings there. They're always plugged in year-round, and supposedly they don't use electricity when they're fully charged, but I don't know if that's true. So we might want to look at ways that we can save electricity if that's possible, but the savings weren't realized, so that needs to be increased. That's the biggest item. We also didn't know we were going to sell so much concessions because Sammy's being open, and we still sell quite a bit of bottled drinks, and so the expenses and revenues on that side went up. To fund those increases, we decreased the repair and maintenance on the course and golf supplies, dues, subscriptions, by amounts. The last three line items, in the budget, we only budget for cash items when it comes to advertising, but we know there's going to be some trades throughout the year that are non-cash items, but we don't budget for those. We budget adjust when we do a trade. So we've had a few corporate trades, two of them for advertising with Chase Media and Valpak, and one for some work on one of the tee boxes where people were crashing their carts into the curb. So we had some trades for corporate passes. on those. And that's what the last three items are.
Is the advertising, you're saying you only account for cash, so we're still spending 15?
So,
in my opinion, only 15? I mean, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's a 15 increase to what we budgeted.
No.
Okay. Oh, that's
so a 15. This is okay. An increase on top of whatever the cash amount we budgeted. But we really have.
But this isn't the trade amount. This is cash.
This is the non-cash amounts.
Oh, this is non-cash.
On the budget adjustment.
Okay.
Yeah. Do we want to go on to the next year? Or do you have further questions on the current year?
Let's move on.
Okay. Okay, just click on slideshow or however you want to do it. Okay. Thanks. Okay.
Are we moving from 10 to 11? Do we need to do a vote on that? It was a review action.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You do need to vote on the amendments.
I'm trying to pull it up. All right. I move that we adopt resolution number 5-6-2014A, a resolution adopting the amended 2013-2014 fiscal year budget for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion has been seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, we'll have a roll call vote. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mr. Augustus?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay, first we're going to talk about a couple of the general revenues, just an update. For March, we got for this year, it's in red, so we're flat in March, which represents January sales, and then April's distribution represents February sales, and that went up a few thousand dollars. So, not a huge change, but you can see the trends are pretty consistent when people buy stuff. The next month is pretty important. It seems a lot of people buy stuff in the spring and March. So, we'll see how that goes. But so far, we're about 30,000 ahead of last year. Can you go to the next slide? On franchise fees, we had a really mild winter, and so we had been higher throughout the whole year, but the last couple of months we actually went below last year. But I still anticipate that we'll have over 400,000, which is about 35,000 more than what was initially budgeted, so we should be fine. Let's just go over the... You can ask other questions about the budget if you like, but I just thought I'd go over the largest items first. We added a public works full-time person instead of a part-time person, and that was funded out of the general fund, Fund 10, and now the water and sewer fund, Fund 51, and that's about 50-50 in each fund. The road maintenance, line item 1062-1040, that's just for street maintenance, was increased $10,000. We tentatively have an amount for a Harvey Boulevard roundabout, but there hasn't been a lot of study put into that. It's just a placeholder.
That was my question on that. Has there been any other options presented or looked at?
I haven't heard of anything. So that might be something that we discuss during next year. It's only being funded with restricted money, so it's not, it would have to be impact fees for streets.
Okay.
Fund 51, the water sewer fund, Tentatively, we have $1.5 million for the secondary meters and the related debt that would need to be financing that.
I'm looking at the budget by fund, and I don't see where account number is that I can see that on.
You won't be able to see it in account number because with enterprise funds, it hits a balance sheet and a liability account. So
makes sense.
Not an expense account.
And this is something that was just added recently? This is the first I've heard that we've added this.
Yeah, so we talked about it in our budget finance committee that the lowest cost would be, just for the meters, would be about $1.5 million.
Right.
And that is a placeholder, too. Doesn't mean that's the way we're going to go, but Siemens had projected $2.4 to $3.4 million to do additional work, some infrastructure improvements plus meters. And this was based on analysis that David and Jeff did.
And on that, David, is there any way that we could have Siemens come present to the council again?
Absolutely. I would also love to have staff do an analysis of costs if we were to do it ourselves so that we can compare.
I met with David Bunker and Jeff Mogg, was it Thursday or Friday? And I'm starting to put together that analysis, and I would find it hard for myself to vote for that $1.5 million this preliminarily to be in the budget. And, you know, we discussed it, but I've never heard us discuss putting that $1.5 million in the budget, so that just caught me by surprise because I think, for me, I'm not quite ready to vote for a budget that has that large of an item that's been that unresearched, unless we all agree that any of these large expenditures, they're put in there as placeholders, but we haven't really approved them until we talk. I just don't want someone to say, oh, yeah, you approved the budget that would have this $1.5 million expenditure, so we're going to do it, you know. And I feel the same way about the Harvey Boulevard $300,000 too. I don't think we've looked at all the options completely on that, and haven't got bids or anything. So anyway, a lot of the capital expenditures, if anyone views it as, you know, it's set in stone, or this is a preliminary approval by voting for the budget, I'd have to vote no on the budget based on some of these things that I'm not quite certain we should spend that money on. But anyway, that's just some preliminary thoughts.
I added it because the council approved the water committee's conservation committee's recommendation that they look into second meters, and so I had to put at least the smallest amount that I felt was proper. So I felt that number could change, but I did it based on how the council responded to the committee's recommendation.
And we've done the same thing with past budgets. For instance, the funds that we anticipate will be needed for Deerfield Park have been in the budget for I don't know how many years.
Decade.
10 years. Right. So it is kind of a placeholder. But before we could move forward with a metering system, it would again have to be approved by the council.
Yes.
Right.
There would be bids and there would be approvals on those bids.
And I'll say I like the way the budget process has gone. I like how thorough you are on making sure we're budgeting the right amounts. And I feel really comfortable with everything except for the capital projects that I feel like they need more research before we're really, really ready to approve them. So.
And so Siemens had talked about a $40,000 study that would talk about the design and different things, and you have to look at whether that's worth it to you to see what improvements they're actually making, because Rocky Mountain Power is a big reason why they think they can make this feasible, is they offer these big rebates to people that do these energy savings plans. And I know when I was at Salt Lake County that they would do studies for Salt Lake County, and then they would take on the project based on their design and then save money, but that was with solar power, so this is a little different. But at the Salt Palace, they did quite a few projects there. And frankly, as a small city, we just don't have the expertise, I don't think, to do an accurate number on the savings side. So, and I don't think the savings will ever be enough to cover the costs, honestly. But there's reasons why you do it besides costs. If we just did parks because of cost, we wouldn't ever do parks. Sure. So there's reasons besides just cost to do secondary meters, and I think the Water Conservation Committee would agree with that. The next item, major item, we have a long-term contract with American Fork Police that we renew annually, and 3.5% is really reasonable for public safety, and we're fortunate to have a contract with American Fork for that amount. Our fire services right now, I've been told it's estimated at 4.2%. But that number could change depending on how the board votes. That hasn't been finalized. And so another item was I have in there is a merit increase of 3% for those that are based on their job reviews with their supervisors, they would be eligible for up to 3%.
Could I comment on this one for a minute?
Sure.
I'm not really sure where the 3% came from, but in my opinion, I think our employees deserve at least what we would be giving to the police department and the Lone Peak Fire and Safety. I think that should be increased, is my personal opinion.
Well, and part of it, I think we have to look at past increases. So, for example, if there were past years when police and fire went with nothing while our employees got steady increases, then that might merit some imbalance there. But, yeah, we certainly should try to be fair to employees.
Doesn't the increase for public safety, though, also include overhead expenses? It's not just a salary increase.
That's right. It could include other things. It's overall budget. So it's hard to compare directly. But we should take the time.
Generally, though, yeah, that's true. But when you look at every line item altogether, generally your materials and supplies stay flat. And so actually the overheads bring the average down. Their salary and wages part is actually higher than that on if, but with benefits. This is included. So, anyway.
So, are some of our merit increases going to be higher than 3%? Is that an average, or are we capping it at
3%? That's the cap.
See, I think, like Councilmember Geddes said, I think we should expand that and allow the supervisor, department head, manager, whoever, to have some flexibility with how they're awarding those merit increases then.
You mean to give some people 1% and some people 5%, but the overall expense is 3%?
Right. The overall average would be 3%, but I think the supervisor should have some latitude and not say, oh, we're only going to give you up to 3%.
We are doing that.
I don't have a problem with
we
that.
We already do that.
Yeah, we're doing that.
It was capped at 3.
Well, it's capped at 3, but some people get 1 or 2.
That's right. Then that's not a cap.
Well, so what about the person that deserves 5%?
Right.
To come in line with, you know, another job. I mean,
it's really hard because really every part of our city has improved from the last year. And so whether it's golf, events, finance, public works, every part has done, you know, I feel has done improvements. And so there are a few people that you might be able to not give as much, but it's really hard. I mean,
but that's why we should leave that discretion up to their supervisor and manager. And if an employee really went above and beyond for that year, yeah, they may deserve 4 or 5% because you're going to have some employees that really excel from one year to the next and some that don't. But I don't think we should cap them categorically and say nobody can get more than 3%.
And I understand, Charles, that's not your decision. So I'm not attacking you by any means.
No, I know you're trying to help. And I'm kind of stuck between city manager and elected officials, so
I believe what we're doing, though, Charles, is that in terms of the language, is that there's a total of 3% for all employees. But we are leaving it up to the department heads to allocate that. So someone could get 1% and someone could get 4%, but the total increase for all employees is still 3%.
But that's not what we were just told by both of you. You said it was capped at 3%.
In the past, it's been capped.
No, I don't mean that.
No, that's what you both just said, that it was capped at 3%.
That's how
that
it was.
That isn't what I said.
That's not what he said, but that's what happened last year, was there was a, whatever the rate we approved, that was the highest amount. So, I don't know. You can have more discussion with David about it. And this isn't the final budget. This is just the tentative budget tonight. But I'm just putting the numbers together. I don't want to be.
We can get some clarity right now, David. And so, is the language of this not so that it's a 3% increase for a maximum for all of the total employee budget? However, it is still up to the department heads to determine whether someone gets a 3% or a 1%, and if someone gets a 1%, then maybe someone's getting 4%. But it doesn't mean that each employee is maxed out at 4%. Someone theoretically could get a higher amount, but that also means that someone's getting a lower amount.
In the past, we didn't do it that way. However, I feel that's a more appropriate way to manage, because some employees, depending on where they are and the training that they've received, what they're doing for the city, they increase in knowledge and skill enough that they should be able to get 4%, while some others may get 1 or 2.
Right.
And so I appreciate that discussion, because I feel that's the way it should be handled. In the past, we haven't. We have actually had a cap. So I prefer it to be the way the council is talking about now, and that is to be flexible, but the total would not exceed 3%.
Right. That was my understanding. So okay. I didn't say we'll that no employee down. Would not get more than it. I just said the total amount of employees increase is 3%, which is 1% greater than inflation last year. So
I'm fine with that. I think that should be a city manager call, not a policy that needs to be set.
So do we need to do anything different to make that happen? Is there anything special we need to do, or is that just kind of something that you'll oversee?
Based on your direction, mm-hmm. We'll just oversee that.
Okay. Okay. The next line item is it's estimated that the healthcare market will increase. Healthcare benefit-related items will increase overall by 6%. We're meeting with Spectrum Management next week to see where the bids have come in, and that number could be refined a little bit more in the next budget presentation. We also have set aside $300,000 for the golf maintenance shed and the infrastructure related to that. We have $4,200 increase for other events, cultural arts committee, concerts, and quarterly breakfasts.
Hey, can you describe that a little bit more for us, Charles? Like, what is the breakdown? What does that $4,200 go to? Because I actually noted that as one of my questions. Under community service, there were quite a few increases, and I'd like to dive into those a little bit more just so you know what they are.
I think we initially had $900. We started doing concerts in the park last year, and so we budgeted, I think, $400 for breakfast, for each breakfast, and the rest is for concerts. Oh, I mean, really, that's also the two line items.
Does this one also cover the Santa thing at the end of the year? That's in a different fund?
Yeah, that is the Parks and Trails Committee budget for the Santa.
So this is for resident
events
and four concerts.
Mm.
Okay, so looking at it for last year, like you said, we had $900 in our budget. This year we're budgeting 5,100, which is an increase of 4,200.
Mm-hmm.
400 of that is going to the breakfast.
Each breakfast, so 1,600 overall for the breakfast.
We only did one last year, one breakfast.
Okay, so we're planning on three breakfasts or four breakfasts.
Yeah.
This year. So we're allocating $1,800 or so to the concerts in the park.
So you have $3,500 for concerts in the park and a bigger concert that includes a bigger concert during the family festival. I think it's $1,000 or $1,500 for the family festival and maybe $500 for the other concerts. It's most of the costs relate to just the equipment rental. So
how many people did we have attend those last year? Because if I remember right, there were only 7 to 20 people that attended.
At the concerts?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
No, you know, the first concert was in the hundreds. The last one was in the tens because it was cold. So that's true. The last one was in October. And so this year, we're trying to get a sponsor. And that may happen. And if it does, then this number would go down. If it doesn't, then we're trying to promote this with Sammy's and have more people there. If at the end of the summer, then Cedar Hills residents are not interested in a summer concert series, then we won't do it again.
Yeah, I just know the ones that I saw. I mean, there weren't more than probably 20 or 25 people for any of the ones that I saw.
Yeah.
Do you know, David, did we keep numbers on those about how many people were attending each concert?
I don't know that we kept an attendance number. I don't recall doing that.
I don't know. That seems like an awful big amount to be spending. But
you mean compared to recreation, where we're spending a lot more than that?
But if we're talking about spending, I don't know, $1,000 for a concert that 20 people are going to attend or even 50 people are going to attend,
yes,
that seems like a pretty big expense compared to a recreation activity where we're actually charging people and they're helping pay some of that cost.
You're right. If it does continue then at that, then we won't do that. But a lot of residents have said they were interested in the arts. I know that we have a lot of people that are, and we're hoping that they show up.
Right.
If it turns out that they don't, then we won't do it again.
So is the thought that this would be kind of like Pleasant Grove's promenade? I mean, there would be this big event.
Yes, I mean, I think that if we could have synergistic things like Pleasant Grove has their promenade, which is like a farmer's market, along with a concert series, those are worthwhile events. And so we spend an awful lot of money providing recreation for our children, but do virtually nothing in terms of the arts for our children. And a lot of our children participate in the arts. So I felt like it was somewhat unfair in terms of allocating virtually nothing to the arts, a lot for recreation. So we hope that people show up.
Right. That just, to me, I mean, that's a pretty, it's a pretty sizable risk to spend $1,000 to hope that 20 people are going to show up. Because I know talking to some of the council members at Pleasant Grove, they're having a really hard time getting people to come to their promenade and to their farmer's market and to some of those things, and they're struggling to get people to attend them. And so they kind of think that over the last couple of years, farmers markets and some of those art activities were kind of the popular, the trendy thing to do, and they're actually decreasing in attendance over the last little while. So, I don't know, just my thought.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. The next item was a $1,200 increase. The Beautification, Recreation, Parks, and Trails Committee requested $1,800 more than the previous year. They had $3,000 originally in their budget. Some of those projects include the Christmas tree lighting, the Santa's helper, and some of these service projects, yard of the month. What we didn't approve was $500 for some rocks on the side of Canyon Road, which appeared like a low estimate, and also $100 for some poster promotion. The park maintenance contract increased, and there's never-ending list of projects that can be done in the parks, and so there was an increase of $18,100.
Who's that contract with?
What?
Who is that contract with?
Wilkinson Maintenance.
Okay.
There was also $50,000 set aside with restricted money, care tax money, and park development impact fee money for the Bay Hill Park Phase 1.
So, David, quick question on that. As you can imagine, I have a lot of people asking me about that. Mm-hmm. Do we have an idea of what Phase 1 would include and when it would start?
So it would include a playground area up towards the Bay Hill Drive itself. So the you know, the parking lot and the area down lower would not be completed at this time.
Okay.
So it would just be up towards Bay Hill Drive. And that's an estimate to do a playground set and a little play area.
And grass or area?
Not to do the whole park.
Just in that area.
Okay. Just in that. And it would be the last house on the south side, on the west side of Bay Hill,
okay,
right before the park area.
Okay.
It would be in that area. It's not designed all the way. That's an estimate for what it would take to put that playground equipment in.
And would that be towards the beginning of the fiscal year or the end? Do you know?
It could be immediately after July 1. We could look at the design, get the contours,
okay,
and that could be in before the fall.
And there was also, I mean, the Bay Hill Park originally was going to be funded by, I believe, Cottonwood Cells. So if that ever did materialize, the funding on that could increase also. Next. So,
wait, one more thing on that. On line 5173330, it says professional technical for waters to increase 40,000. What is that for?
On which one?
Line 5173330. Sorry, I went through the budget and I was pulling questions from there as well. It's just under the water fund. It just says professional technical, and it has an increase of 40,000.
Oh, that's the design for the secondary meters.
Okay.
Can I ask another question before we move on to reductions? And this is maybe partly a question for David. A number of residents have expressed concern about the small size of our signs when we announce things like public hearings, major things where we want their input. And I'm wondering, is there room in our budget already, hopefully without an increase, where maybe for some communications fund where we can fund better quality, larger signs at different roundabouts and key locations so the residents are better informed when we have a major event, such as a concert in the park or a public hearing for an important development? I mean, we can definitely look into that. One of the, are you talking about like a public hearing notice? So we have a standard size yard sign. It's really small. And they are small. And we adjust those for every single public hearing. So if we can look at going to a bigger sign, and then we would have to modify the bigger sign as well. But yeah, definitely we can look at that so that they can identify what, you know, what the sign is. And maybe we could pick a location where we have or a couple locations where we have big ones plus the small ones. So maybe we can augment that and help people.
What material are you talking about for signs? Paper or something else?
I have no idea.
Oh.
I just know I want
it's really hard to larger signs. Find something. I don't know what it's made out of.
I have not done any research to know
okay
what kind of sign would stand up in our weather.
The concern that's been expressed is just that the sign has so much wording on it and you're driving
right
at a certain speed that you can't catch what it says.
I was just wondering, I know you talked about signs earlier in work session. I didn't know if you were talking about like something with rocks on both sides of the banner, or you're just talking about more of a banner type of thing?
Temporary.
Yeah.
Temporary signs.
Okay. Like maybe, like I'm thinking like maybe like a 4x8 sign that we could, you know, keep posted somewhere and then just change the information on it each time.
Okay.
You know, just so that it's readable. And I agree. You drive by and it's posted on, yep. on Cedar Hills Drive and Canyon Boulevard, but you're all going like 40 miles an hour and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how make the font big enough. I don't think it would fit in the roundabout, to be honest. But
no, I think you're going to have to. We would have to go to bigger signs, and maybe it could be.
Or like, electronic, like the Lehigh sign by Culver's. But
yeah, if we approve the moniker out here, maybe we could post public hearings on it too.
Yeah. That's what I thought was be the best use for that is actually our meetings and stuff. So.
One other quick question I had about increases also. Sorry, Charles.
Sure.
Community services, we have an additional $8,000 in advertising. What exactly is that for?
That's the Vista Room rentals.
So that's so advertising just really, for events
yeah,
here?
They were, yeah, they have been using most of the budget for advertising for this building. And so that just showed the reality of what was happening.
So I was looking at my notes on that one, too, because I saw that. And it used to all be all in the golf fund. Mm-hmm. And now it's the same amount of money just allocated to golf versus just a room.
Okay, so that's just for events that are being held here,
yes.
though, right?
Yeah.
So like the bridal fairs and things like that that they go mm-hmm. and advertise at, that includes all of those fees that
and
get charged.
Okay.
Yes, if they work with someone to get a better location on Google
right.
for their website.
Okay.
Anything else on increases? Okay. Tentative budget summary of reduced or eliminated expenditures. So we are anticipating decreasing property taxes by approximately $50,000 in the golf debt service because of the motor vehicle allocation. The water and sewer fund, we are delaying the Canyon Road sewer project. And for the TSSD rate increase that David talked about earlier, we are absorbing that 13.8% increase by TSSD, which is approximately $63,000 to the water and sewer fund.
So why are we doing that?
Well, a couple of years ago, our costs were about $600,000 for sewer operations mm-hmm. in the city. And then David had some conversation with TSSD about how they were measuring it. And our numbers came in much lower after that. And so even with the increases, we're still below what we were anticipating 2 years ago. And so we'll still have sewer increases down the road, but we just looked at the expenses of what we were at, and we can delay it 1 year. Or if you prefer, we could average out 2 years or whatever, but we're not where the Bowens and Collins projection was yet.
But does that mean in the next year that residents are going to see a much larger jump?
They're going to see whatever for that year the Bowens Collins jump
just
was.
Just the 3% or whatever it was. So they're not going to see this 13% increase?
No. Just whatever the study is. Also, I'm not planning on a decision survey if we can finish this one this year, hopefully. Insurance, our insurance rates went down when we switched to Olympus, and so there's a decrease there.
So this isn't health insurance, this is?
This is general liability to city insurance and auto insurance. Elections, there's no elections in the next year, so that went down. Legal services, I have it going down 5,000 now. Even though we've still been having grammar requests, we seem to be getting a little more efficient, and so our costs are more than our monthly, our monthly costs, we were projected around $60,000 for the year, $62,000 in December. But when you figure in the cost of the grandma stuff, it's going to be closer to $80,000 or $85,000 this year. But I'm hoping next year we can continue to learn from that process and reduce costs a little there. The computer IT services, we were able to decrease $3,000 with a different vendor, and our telephone communications and telephone network, we were able to eliminate some phone lines and save money there. And there was a plan to reduce the subsidy by the golf fund by almost $27,000.
Okay, so quick question on that. We planned for 115 approximately this year. Where, how are we on that?
So we're doing better than we were last year, but we had huge May and June last year.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we're doing better than last year, we could still end up with a deficit, or we could do better depending on the weather, really, and how things pan out. So there is a possibility that we will be fine and we won't have to change that subsidy amount for this year.
You mean to increase it?
Yeah, to increase it. But there's also a possibility that we could say in June, you know, we're going to be $30,000 short. So
that's my question is, I'm interested in if we're really close to that, or we're anticipating we're going to be close to what we budgeted this year, what is changing that we think we can reduce it next year? Because what I don't want to do is bring it down $26,000, and then in May of next year, we're trying to find $30,000 to bump it back up again because we didn't. What's changing? Why do we think the subsidy is going to be less this
year? Some revenue. Well, revenue numbers went up, and some. Let me go to the sheet itself, but I can tell you exactly just looking at the sheet. This is from input from. First, we had input from the department itself, and then I talked to Wade and Greg and said, that's not going to work because they weren't covering any costs. The subsidy was going to go up. And so then we had also input from the mayor and he felt like some numbers could be more, could be higher. So on the green fees, it's projected to go $25,000 higher. Snack Shack and concessions supposed to go higher, but that is because we're selling concessions and we didn't anticipate that the year before. So that, and season passes, that's pretty reasonable. And even the green fees is totally reasonable if we have good weather. I think right now the numbers are like a 50-50. Now, do we want to have 100% certainty? If we want to have 100% certainty, then we have to be really conservative in our revenue numbers. And it just depends on how certain you want to be on everything.
Right. And on my personal opinions on the golf fund, I would like to be conservative. We haven't yet exceeded our goals on revenue or reduction of expenses or even on the subsidy. And so I don't want to set this false expectation that we're somehow going to be able to do that this upcoming year. And then in the end of the year, we're trying to find where we're going to pull $30,000 from. That's my opinion, just because it's been such a high source of controversy in the city. I would prefer to be very conservative on those numbers.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with Councilmember Reese on that, because this sounds like a big risk to take where we really don't have the data to back it up. Now, if we had 15 years of numbers from this building and how it was doing with the course, with the renovation, everything we've done, then maybe I would think that would be okay, but this just sounds risky, to say the least.
If that is true, we will have to cut services in the general fund because it's in balance right now.
But we're going to have to do the same thing a year from now if it's true.
That is.
Or it could be even worse.
And I would rather be able to plan for it now than be stuck with 2 months in the budget trying to figure out what we're going to cut.
But it's the same thing that we go back to. We may cut it back this year, but let's say that we get caught and all of a sudden we've gone exactly the opposite. Now we have to come up with the 26,000 plus additional on top of that. Then next year it could be even worse on top of that.
Yeah, well, I can tell you golf is cut to the bare bones. They I cut repairs and maintenance even more, and we cut advertising because a lot of advertising was being used for both events, and some of that got moved over 8,000, and then another additional 4,000 was cut. So what we're anticipating is that they're going to do corporate trades to fund a lot non-cash items, which we would budget adjust later now. So if they did more than 20,000 in advertising, that would come from non-cash trades. And
we hope
Wade has been really good, and he has been excellent at getting things here, tournaments here. But the problem is you can be really conservative, but then it punishes Wade that's doing a really good job, and he gets no reward for the good job he's doing because we're saying, even though you're improving, we're going to say that you're not improving. And so then you don't get a raise because we can't pay for that raise. You know what I mean?
But at the opposite end of the spectrum, if we don't meet those goals, we're punishing our residents because we have to find somewhere to come up with that money. And so we haven't yet come close to this kind of a subsidy.
That's true. At the same time, that's the whole reason why we have fund balance, so we don't have to be so conservative that we're just crazy conservative. You know what I mean? Because we have about 800,000 in fund balance. If we gave that all away and we had no cushion for mistakes, then I would be like, let's be super conservative. But if, let's say they're $50,000 short, we have the fund balance. And we have always had about a $50,000 improvement. And if the market tanks, we're going to have to make adjustments throughout the city anyway. But that's my point, is we have an emergency fund, and to punish everyone because what might happen or might not happen, I don't think these are higher, but they're not like crazy high.
But the reality is we've never had a subsidy that low.
That's
I think what Councilmember Augustus is saying too. If we had data showing that some years we were able to have a subsidy that low, then maybe we'd feel more comfortable. Right. We've never had one that low.
But on the flip side of that, if you also look at green fees and season passes, we're saying that our projections for revenue are higher than we've ever had, and we're $25,000 above our highest year. About 10,000 higher than our highest actual amount, which was 2013. So to say that we're going to have the best record on year that this course has ever had, that's a pretty broad statement to make.
It's just 10,000 higher than our actual 2 years ago.
Right.
For green fees. That's not $10,000 than 2 years ago, I don't think is ridiculous.
Yeah, but when that's the highest that we've ever had, because if you look back 2011, 2012, I mean, we were under 500,000, just over 500,000.
So let's go back to the discussion we had when we did the golf presentation. We talked about some of the changes that we made to help fund this. Now that my mind's working. We changed the rates, and we projected if we had the same volume, we'd bring in about 50, I think it was an additional 50,000 more than what we had budgeted even. So we weren't going for, we were projecting if we moved our rates up a little bit that maybe our volume would go down some, but we would still be able to get higher than we have in the past, and we're only asking for 10,000 more than 2 years ago.
But we're asking for 25,000 more than we had last year.
Just in the budget, but not actual.
So what's our actual then?
Our actual 2 years ago, 2013, was 555. Our budget is 565.
Well, no, what's our actual for 2014 so far?
I know that we've improved from the prior year so far, which was our best year. And so it's up to the last couple of months on whether we're going to beat it, because the last 2 months were the best months that we've had.
But we also didn't increase green fees either one of those years, right? So to increase green fees, but also say that we're going
out our revenue. Yes, but we're still the lowest priced golf course in the valley, even with the increases. And we went over that in the golf presentation.
So my recommendation, I would like the finance committee to take this back, because if we're projecting revenues that we've never met and a subsidy that we've never been that low, if we don't meet it and we don't have any historical data to show that we can meet it, and I'm not aware of any changes that are going to be significant that's going to allow us to meet it, then at the end of our next budget year, we're cutting services to our residents to fund that subsidy, and that's not fair to our residents.
Yes. I understand. So I think that's a good idea. One of the things that we have to look at with Wade is to ask him, you know, how is the new marketing scheme going? We're getting $5 more per green fees on our coupons. 50% of our attendees use coupons. Are we getting the same positive response as we got the last year? We only have like a month's worth of data, though, and the weather on the weekends hasn't been the greatest. So for the last month, I am worried about April's numbers, because the weather wasn't great in April on weekends.
No, I actually think the finance committee should take this back. So I'll completely agree. I think we need to look at this again.
And I have no problem if you guys want to figure out what, you know, changes you want to make, but these aren't that much different than actual numbers that have come in, if you look at it.
No, and I'm not saying the finance committee is going to come back with some drastically different, but I think it's something that is worth more discussion.
We can send it back to the finance committee.
Why are you guys laughing over it?
Oh, I'm not.
Why am I laughing over what?
Why are you laughing? Because Jenny and I asked if this would come back to the finance committee.
How do you know? I don't even know what you're talking about.
When I said yes, I would agree with Councilmember Reese about bringing this back, both you and Charles kind of snickered and laughed at each other.
I don't know what you're referring to. I looked at him and said, "We'll send it back to the finance committee."
Yeah, and give a little laugh over. I was just asking what was funny about it.
You're way too much into something. So.
Okay, I guess I am, but I can go back and look at the video if you like. So.
Good. So we'll send it back to the finance committee, and then the finance committee members can make recommendations about how they would like to adjust revenue and expenses.
Can I just say one last thing on that? So I agree with that recommendation. I'd also like to be sure that the comment was made about, well, how is Wade going to deal with this? And I think the right approach there is that his merit increase is based on how well is he helping us to reduce the subsidy and how well the course is doing. So I think we can deal with that while also having realistic numbers here.
Right.
And just so the council member knows, a year ago when we were having finance committee meetings, then Wade came to me with recommendations for golf revenue, and I slashed them and cut them back a lot. So this year, they're similar to what he said he could do last year. So I'm just giving him the opportunity to do what he said he was going to do last year. So sometimes you give people an opportunity or challenge them, and they're going to do well. I think he will.
And I think that's great. Then we would have more revenue than we budgeted for, and that's always a better situation to be in than coming in under.
Right. And the reason that the subsidy is reduced is because if the revenue is increased, rather than put that into increasing our expenses, I wanted to reduce the subsidy to the golf course. Because you have a choice. If you increase revenue, you can also increase your expenses, which means you're spending more on product or maybe you hire another person or something like that. And I chose not to do that. I chose to reduce the subsidy because that is in the best interest of the residents. And I hope everybody recognizes that.
But setting revenue projections too high isn't.
Okay, well, make your case in the finance committee meeting, and please show up.
Excuse me, I was out of town when that was scheduled.
Okay, very good. So, do you have anything else, Cheryl?
No. That's it.
Then,
so, if you guys have any questions, this is, by law we have to pass the tentative budget tonight, so, but obviously that can change a lot still by June.
I would actually like to make a motion for it.
Okay, thanks.
The motion I would like to make is actually in honor of a past council member, Councilmember Jackman, and several of you are probably familiar with this. So my motion would go as follows. Year after year, day after day, our beloved benevolent beings of the legislature have maintained meaningless statutes, in this case mandating tonight that the City Council adopt a completely non-binding preliminary budget in advance of passing an actual budget, and in this case prior to full figures being available from the County Assessor's Office. Nevertheless, wishing to be in compliance, being in complete compliance with even poorly written laws that even the benevolent legislature isn't willing to follow, I would move that we approve the non-binding preliminary budget for the fiscal year 2014-2015, and again publicly invite esteemed public servants, the legislature, to attend more municipal meetings so that they can better understand how the local municipal government functions.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Motion passes. All right. Now we are on item number 12. And Mr. Goodwin, you are presenting.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight we have a discussion on the commercial zone, specifically the smart property, and the proposal that's currently before the Planning Commission and the City Council regarding the 55-plus congregate care facility. Before I really get into that, though, I wanted to go back to an analysis that I gave in March at the public hearing. When we give information to the council, we want it to be accurate. We want the decisions that the council makes and the Planning Commission makes, we want them to be based on accurate information. And when we feel like we get better information, we want to update that and make sure that that is given to the council. So with that note, I wanted to make sure that you knew that we've contacted the Utah County Tax Assessors and the Salt Lake County Tax Assessors offices, and we've had multiple conversations with them. Regarding the current Rosegate facility that's located in Sandy, as well as getting background information on the process for assessment of a commercial building that may be somewhat residential in nature. Based on our conversations, we feel it's necessary to update my previous statements and give some more information. So in the previous report, it was stated that the Rosegate facility would be taxed at a full commercial rate of 100%. We gave its taxable value, and we gave what that benefit financially would be to the city, and I believe it was about $86,000 per year. This information was based on a tax report that we received from Salt Lake County Assessor's Office. The report we received stated that the Rosegate facility in Sandy was taxed at a COM primary rate, which we took to mean was a commercial primary rate. However, the building is taxed at a primary residential rate of 55% of its taxable value. After having multiple conversations with the Salt Lake Assessor's Office, we found out that the building was assessed by commercial assessors because it's in the commercial zone, and due to its size and nature of the building, it is assessed by the commercial assessor's office. But that due to it being a multi-family housing, a multi-housing facility, it was going to be taxed at the primary residential rate. So we wanted to give that and keep that in mind, and I wanted to share some of the what that does to our analysis that we gave in March. So with the new proposal, the value of the building has changed. When I spoke with Doug Young, that he estimated the value of the building as he will present tonight is somewhere in the range of $19 to $24 million. If it were to be taxed at a commercial rate, meaning 100% of its value, it would be taxed at the property tax received to the city, not just in general, but just to the city, would be $54,000 to $68,000, depending on where on that 19 to 24 million dollar spectrum it lies. If it were taxed at a residential rate, it would generate $38,000 in property tax to the city. Now, to give you some perspective on what that means, let me talk about sales tax for just one moment. So a breakdown of the Sales and Use Tax Act shows that the combined tax rates for all the taxing purposes broken down by the cities, and Cedar Hills has a current sales tax rate of 6.85%. Of this, 4.7% goes to the state, 0.25% goes to the county, 0.8% goes to fund various transportation and highway measures, and 0.1% is earmarked for Cedar Hills care tax purposes. The remaining 1% is divided in half. 0.5 goes to the state to be distributed among all the cities based upon population, and the remaining 0.5 stays with the city of Cedar Hills as a point of sale. So the following example gives the tax annual tax liability for a business in a $2 million building, which would be similar to the Lexington Heights office. So if you had a building that was a $2 million building, they would generate in property tax $5,700 a year in property tax. In order to get up to about $35,000 in annual tax given to the city, they would have to have a monthly revenue of about $500,000, just to give you some perspective on that. That's at a tax rate of 0.0685. Their total sales tax collected would be $34,250. Point of sale monthly taxes would be about $2,500, and the point of sale annual taxes would be about $30,000. So you can compare that with the property taxes which this proposed facility would generate. Additionally, it would be expected that we would see an increase reciprocally in the Walmart sales tax as there would be more people shopping there. So while the numbers may have changed with the new analysis, I believe that the economic impact is still a good use of the land financially and economically for the city.
So Chandler, so Utah County is saying it would be taxed at a residential rate, not a commercial rate.
Yeah, he said it depends on, are the people living in the facility, is this their primary residence or is it a secondary residence?
So had we not contacted the county prior to our analysis?
We had. And they kind of gave us, a lot of our analysis was based on how the Sandy facility was taxed. We used that as our benchmark. And we saw that it was taxed at a comp primary. And there's portions of that building that are taxed at a commercial rate, but the residences are taxed at a residential rate up there. So it was a misunderstanding. And as well as some information, that conflicting information that Cheryl and I got from the county. We got a data spreadsheet and a tax breakdown that showed two different things. So there was some misinformation on the various ends. So I just wanted to correct the record tonight with the city council.
So if you could summarize again, the project as proposed tonight would generate in just property taxes, no sales tax at all, approximately what range based on the $19 million to $24 million?
It'd be about $30,000 to $38,000 a year in property tax.
That's no sales tax anything at all.
So
thank you.
Yeah. So the Blue Line and Doug Young, they've been before the Planning Commission. They had a discussion with them regarding this, the new proposal. They took to heart a lot of the feedback that they received at the public hearing that we had in March 18th, and they incorporated a lot of that. And I'm going to turn the time over to them so that they can present that to you. But as we mentioned before, the road between AmSource and the property and the Smart property is of concern. So, and I mentioned before, that we feel like that road is the linchpin for the commercial area. So, I guess that's something to keep in mind as we talk about this. Is how do we proceed with AmSource now that they've received their preliminary approval? So.
Corey Shoup with Blue Line Designs out of Sandy, Utah. Thank you for having us tonight. And what we would propose tonight is we're going to break our presentation up into two separate type presentations. I'm going to do a real quick recap. You're very familiar with the project, and we've seen you multiple times, and so I'm going to do a quick recap of kind of where we were and a work session that we had with the Planning Commission, and then Doug will pick up and take the discussion after me. I appreciate it very much and would just like to say thank you to those of you that were able to respond to an email that went out asking for some feedback and some direction, and we did get a couple of responses, and thank you. So as for a recap, this was the plan that we received approval from the Planning Commission on prior to our last meeting, where it was tabled with the City Council. This was the four-story building. As you see in this illustration, and following that meeting, there was some direction given and some desire to see what a three-story building would look like. We've been back. This is a rendering of a three-story building with some parapets up in here. This was presented to the Planning Commission, and they were pleased. And this isn't the one that they approved. The one that they approved before, if I back up, this, the taller one was the one that they gave their approval on. This one they were equally pleased to see and felt like it would still be successful. Some of the next slides, if you attended any of the other meetings, you are familiar with them. What we have tried to do for some of the residences and the Planning Commission is show some samples or typicals of what the insides of these residences would look like. This was like the grand entry. These are the gathering rooms, a theater room, entertainment rooms where... if you were able to attend the tour of the Sandy unit, you'll remember we had a genealogy room, we had a music room, a scrapbooking crafts room, all of those kinds of things. This is exemplary of what that would be like. It's a typical living unit, two different views of those. And then when we went to the Planning Commission, we considered rotating the building again. As you can tell from what was approved from the Planning Commission, we've since gone back and looked at how to position the building on the site and how to break it up and what you're looking at here is basically the building on an angle from this Cedar Hills Drive and these larger spaces in the back. If we were to flash back to what was approved, these were a little bit more narrow. We've since opened them up, and as you can tell here, there's, I think this was 280 feet of distance between the building and the closest resident, and 100 feet here. So this is almost three times what that is. We're showing a little commercial pad here, and then as you can tell, the building's down here. This is what you just gave preliminary approval. This is the AmSource. This was the road in question right here that is all on the smart piece right here, and then it has one small section right here that does touch the AmSource at 1040. If I remember what you were referring to, that road is road 1040. This is the Hart Station and a couple commercial pads behind it there. We've really felt like we've worked well with the Planning Commission. We, as you also know, we held a neighborhood meeting where we invited everybody who stood and spoke at the City Council meeting to come and give their input. We did have a small turnout and got some more input, and as we have done every time, we've always come back and tried to accommodate to an extent possible their comments and still have a successful project. So with that, I'll turn it over to Doug.
Take that, make notes. Doug Young, Salt Lake City, Utah. Of course. I got a green pen. This, what we did is after the meeting, it's really hard to see that. It's not, we'll go to the next one, but you'll be able to see. This is the Walmart, that white roof right there. We've been meeting with, we've been in contact with the individuals that are involved in the selling of this property here by the state. You have to put in a bid. We're going to be one of the companies here that are trying to acquire the property on this location. We were going to coordinate a meeting between us and the mayor and see if how we can coordinate various things on this project. What we've learned is that they've done a study on this property, and this is bigger, so I blew up the area. There again, we have the Walmart right here. This is the living facility. And currently, I wanted to go back to the one slide before I go to this, and that is that right now this is really a strong corridor, an east-west corridor that is so vital to creating any type of a stronger retail center here. And currently, right now, as we met with Highland City, they would like to take this street and bring it down here and connect it on this dotted line here, up here.
Harvey Boulevard.
And they have the support of Utah County. However, the state would like to take this road and curve it here and take it into this small retail center that they have here, which would be ideal for Cedar Hills because that would connect to the big road that connects in front of the Walmart. And this is what the city's been lacking for their retail center, really, is this stronger east-west corridor right here. You'd be pulling people from clear down here and be able to pull them up to your Walmart directly. And so the next slide that I have shows that what the Highland and the county would like to do is just continue this right here like this on these large dots. And essentially, it'll bypass you. There's the mortuary here. This is the city-owned property, and et cetera here. However, if we can unite with the mayor and the city council and encourage Alpine that, hey.
Highland,
if we can encourage them, as the mayor said, to increase their commercial area here, and see the tax revenues that would come to Highland from doing that and encourage them to turn this road as the state wants to, this would create a very strong intersection here and create all this east-west traffic that we need desperately in order to generate the type of retail that the city would like to see here. In addition, they do have, right now, they have a temporary little two-lane road here that they're projecting to come up through here and come in here and tie here. And we're just saying, hey, go ahead, bring it up here, and then just tie it into this intersection at about 400 feet back. And that'll, there again, just add to the traffic pattern here. Rather than just take all that incredible traffic and send it on up to the foot of the mountain there. The other thought was, these are all the road patterns, by the way, that is established right now by the state. All this yellow and green and all this that you see in here is already the plan that has been accepted and signed by the governor. This road here, originally what they had this on this roadway here was it would end right here, and we're suggesting instead of bringing that road and stubbing it right there, which would line up to the mortuary road, all the citizens don't want a main artery road right there, is just open that road up right there and connect it directly into the city's property. And I verified with Highland City, and they don't serve alcohol there, and there doesn't seem to be any hope that they ever will, and that would open up for the city's biggest desire that I've been able to interpret, sit-down restaurant possibilities right here on the entrance of the Cedar Hills Retail Center here. And then the strong connectivity that you'd have literally a loop system all the way around there, a strong system here. All the kids coming from high school down here would come right up this strong intersection, have a great light to go to the high school, and it would really benefit. I think that would be, and the mayor's suggestion of increasing this commercial here, I think might be the hook that would help Highland get on board with this road pattern. I checked with the state, and it's not trust land, so it does actually have. If it was trust land, the state could absolutely just dictate where the roads are going, but it's land that needs to go through some approval processes. When I went through Highland, they said we'll probably end up meeting somewhere in the middle, and probably Mayor Giggy knows the mayor over there. I don't have a relationship with Highland, but I'll tell you, this would be ideal for the development of the property. And so the statements that's always said, that's been said to me for the last almost year now, is we only have one chance to do it right, and my question is how do we accomplish this mandate in the city? And I think one of those methods would be to coordinate with this adjoining city for the Cedar Hills property. After going through that process, we've gone back and looked, and I thought what I might offer to the city is there's a lot of viewpoints in the city on the city council, so everybody has different ideas of how this should be developed. There's a dream and a vision out there of, you know, a lot of walkable space, a lot of walkable type retail. I would have a suggestion. They did a complete economic study on this. I think that economic study can be altered by creating this strong east-west corridor and enforce more commercial in here. What I would suggest is, and what we would offer to do is pay for an economic marketing analysis of the SMART property and the city property. You can select the firm and have them outline for the city what, in their expertise, would be the best use for the property and how the property should be developed or could be developed. That would be something that I would suggest and offer to the city. It may be beneficial to hire the same firm that did the economic study for the state here. They would have all the current information. I think it would be a very economical study, probably something in the $5,000 range. And I think that would help focus it, because currently right now what the directive is that, hey, put maybe a little bit of residential on top of some walkable retail space and try to blanket that throughout the whole zone here. And from the input that I've had from the Boyer Company, from all the commercial real estate people, from all my experience, is that does not work except on a very limited basis. And that's the type of use they're planning on right here, is just a little bit of walkable with four-story apartments above. They have a lot of apartments and density that they'd like to put in here, and then this goes back to single family. And one of the studies did show that a senior apartment or a senior living facility is a very beneficial use in this area, along with some single family housing. And so I guess I wanted a discussion item, because I'm throwing out two things. One thing, is it possible to do an economic marketing study? And if we did that, would the city support that? That we'd be absolutely taking information from absolute experts in the marketing place that, hey, this is what can happen, so that we can align the vision and the dreams of the city to what is actually doable in the city. That would be my first question. The second question is there a possibility, do you feel, that we could encourage this alignment here that would help this retail center here? And would all those studies need to be done? And if the study was done and it supported this type of use with the senior facility here, would the city be approve something of that nature? Or is that something just completely removed from what they want to see in this area? And I'm saying this because I'm meeting with the SMARTs in the morning, and I've tried to accommodate, and we've tried to accommodate everybody's point of view, everybody's opinion, and we all have differing ones. And I couldn't think of any way that I could meet the city's needs, meet all the issues that are out there, except doing an independent market analysis of whether what we're even proposing here is logical or not. And secondly, what to go back and talk to the SMARTs about what kind of facility they would like to see there. And so, having said all this, if you have questions or input, it's really just a discussion. If you could just talk to me and tell me what your position is on what I've said.
So I've
studied. Do we open it up to resident comments real quick?
Go ahead.
Right. So if you have a question for Doug, go right ahead. But in terms of our comments, I think I want to give the two residents who signed up an opportunity to speak and then have us discuss it, if that's okay.
Sounds fine.
Did you have a question for Mr. Young?
No, I had some responses to his.
Okay. All right. If it's just responses, let's put off on that. Do you guys have questions? Okay. All right. Then I have okay. Doug, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Angela Johnson, you have 3 minutes. Name and address, please.
Angela Johnson, 9676 North Winchester Drive. Can I make a comment about the budget?
I don't think so, because we're on the item now. It's not public comments.
Darn it. Okay, I've got to come back. Okay, that's okay. I can come back. So just quickly, wow. I mean, that was wow. Blue line, wow. They've definitely done their homework. And this is so exciting to see all these exciting things that are happening over in Highland very soon, too. But as you know, I am here asking that we do not do high-density housing. And I've sent this email out to you guys, and you'll soon see all the names of the residents that are saying, let's not do high-density housing, and let's have it be primarily commercial. A couple of points as I was talking to residents that seem to really resonate that I'll bring up. And we have this email also, but I just wanted to bring it up. So height, density, and saturation is contrary to the city's general plan, commercial design guidelines, and other development in Cedar Hills. That seems to be the consensus with many residents. Residential apartments would cannibalize a significant amount of our commercial tax base. And I understand what Chandler was saying, but we have a significant amount of land there, 10 acres, that we will significantly be able to have sales tax revenue and property tax revenue at 100%, which will be wonderful. And then obviously the state legislator developing this land is only going to increase the commercial drive to our land. We have so little commercial land, as you can see on that picture. That's what 176 people in the city, but you know, in our little sphere, have said that they would like to see more commercial. Retail development has a sales tax benefit, plus we collect 100% of the property tax, where apartments have neither. All residential properties receive a 45% tax exemption, regardless of location, which Peter Jepson at the Utah County Assessor mentioned, which Chandler also brought up. But I think that's very significant to think about, 45% tax reduction, not to mention the impact of residential homes on our area. The majority of residents seem to prefer having businesses versus more residential. And Cedar Hills has approximately, I'm not sure now that I'm talking, but very few businesses that generate sales tax. Many cities like to have approximately 20% commercial tax base, and it's been estimated by one of our former mayors that we have around 5%. So let's not eliminate our ability to increase our commercial area in the future. Again, how you see that's just kind of a small area. Please support the current guidelines and allow primarily commercial to be developed in our commercial area. And originally, I think the Blue Line developer had mentioned commercial and residential, and I would just encourage the council and the planning commission, if they could, anybody that comes and proposes, if Blue Line comes back and proposes, that we develop the commercial first. And if the residents are going to go on top, then that's something that is totally fitting with the guidelines of the city with the mixed use. But please develop the commercial first. And it would also ensure that we have businesses, as residents in the letter have shown that they would like to have. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Deborah Gibbons.
Hello. I feel like we're getting to be old friends. We've been having lots of fun with this. Deborah Gibbons, 4601 Spruce Circle, Cedar Hills. We have just in our, again, our very limited sphere, just emailed out a petition that I have a copy for each one of you. 176 people at this point, and we continue to get emails daily, people that are asking us to ask you to please not allow high density to be built in our commercial zone. That's, even though it's deemed mixed use, it's supposed to be at least 50% commercial. And so we ask you to stick with the city guidelines. So I have these copies. I emailed it, and there are more names on here than even earlier when I emailed it out, in case you didn't get a chance to look at it earlier.
Thank you.
There's one Ames now.
And there were many that informed me that they weren't able to come tonight with all the end of school year and crazy things going on with their kids, but they hoped that by putting their name on this, that would bear weight, even though they're not here, to speak and to stand in front of you. And then also, I just wanted you to know that the emails that I've been getting haven't just been, yeah, you can put my name down, but people have very strongly shared their opinions that this is not what they want for our city. They would love to see the commercial developed, but the high-density apartments, the people that have emailed me have been very, very, many of them have been very clear. Please, please, please make sure that this is passed along, even though I can't come to the meeting, that this is not what we want. And finally, at our last city council meeting, people came in droves, and unfortunately we don't have that tonight. But the majority of those people, and of course, obviously, I can't speak for all of them, but the majority of them were here saying, please don't allow the high-density apartment complex. This is not what we're asking for. Please stick to the city guidelines and that this is not the appropriate use of our very limited commercial space. And I think that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Sure. Come up to the mic, please.
I really appreciated those comments that they were just made. What my question would be, and I'd, if they could respond to it, I have a question. If we do a market analysis on this property, and they say, for example, that this is not commercial property, that it will never become commercial property, would you consider, instead of high density, doing single-family detached homes for senior living only? That would be a question that I'm just curious what your response would be if you're connected with the residents in the area. Yes, please.
Anybody who says this will never be commercial.
When we look at the potential of what is going on in the future in Highland with more commercial coming and looking at how commercial tends to bring more commercial, it's very difficult to believe that never, that powerful all-encompassing word, that it will never be anything but residential. So I'm not a market analysis, but commercial brings commercial. And so again, taking away that huge amount of land and making it so that it never can be anything but residential seems like we're shooting ourselves in the foot just because it's here right now, when the future, there's a lot of potential great options.
Okay, thank you. You hadn't quite used up your full 3 minutes, so you're welcome to have taken that extra time. So before we get into council responses and debates, Mr. Crawley asked me to read a letter because he had to leave early, and then I think Mr. Zappala, you were first, and we'll go from there. So these are Mr. Crawley's words. I apologize that I had to leave early, but I have an appointment that cannot be avoided. I want to make my stance very clear so I don't waste any time and energy of Blue Line. Based on everything I understand of the city guidelines, this development does not fit the intent of the zoning for commercial in this area. If the residents were overwhelmingly in favor of the council changing the zoning laws in this area, I would listen to the residents. However, 95% of the feedback I am getting from my neighbors is that this is not what they want in the city commercial district. This is further evidenced by a survey signed by residents stating the following. Petition. We, the undersigned, petition that the current proposal for high-density apartments on the corner of 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive be denied based on the current city guidelines, which states that the primary use of this property is commercial. We also petition that any future high-density apartment proposals be denied. Thank you from the resident of Cedar Hills. Now, Mr. Crawley continues. This was signed by 150 of my neighbors whom I respect. I reviewed the list of those that have signed, and these are people, many of whom don't normally get involved in city issues. My neighbors who voted for me so that I might represent them have voiced their opinion to me sufficiently that I cannot in good conscience vote for a change in zoning for the area contrary to the wishes of the city. I cannot commit to voting for this development regardless of the changes and compromises without the blessing of those who have elected me to represent them. I hope this is clear to Blue Line. Sincerely, Councilmember Rob Crawley. So, Mr. Zappala, time is yours.
Okay. I first wanted to make just a couple of comments on the presentation that we heard tonight, especially with regard to the planned development south of Lone Peak High School. It's something that I've spent some time studying. I think Mr. Young, suggestion regarding a road into the commercial center is a good idea. The traffic study done by the state for that development shows that intersection at North County Boulevard is planned to be unsignaled, and they show it at a service level of F, meaning nobody's going to want to use it and go that way. Turning it into a signaled intersection that would feed into our commercial area, I think, would be very helpful for the area. The circle that he's outlined there, going around the commercial area, I think is also potentially a good idea. It would make the smart property more enticing for commercial uses as opposed to residential plants. What I've heard from residents is that they're concerned about the impact that that would have to Lone Peak High School. My intention is to go and discuss with Alpine School District as to where they are with this. I know they've had some discussions with the state on it, and I know they want to have their concerns met as well. It's going to be a difficult balancing issue if we have a popular commercial center, which is something we all want. That also brings lots of extra traffic, and with the traffic we already have there for the high school, that's just going to be something we have to really contend with. I do like the idea of increasing the amount of commercial zoning as compared to the master plan here. The master plan that the state has presented, I estimated, and this is a fairly low estimate, of about 3,500 residents in that area. That will be extremely challenging for the area, considering they plan only one church and no schools. We're going to need to talk with the state about that plan and with Highland City, because I think it's really unworkable as far as focusing so much on residential and not on the services that residents would need if they're going to live there. They do have, however, high-density residential and explicitly senior housing in that plan, and if that stays, I'd really like to encourage you to do your development of senior housing there. I think it's a better fit. It's on a major road. It goes straight down to the temple. Some of the residents may even be able to walk to the temple from there or take a bus. The bus runs right past there. I just think it's a really, really good fit for what you're trying to do. And especially if it was on the corner south of that road going into our commercial area, you'd have perfect access walking into all of those shops. You'd have bus stops. It's exactly what senior residents would need. I'd really, really encourage you to work with the state to talk about that particular plan. It makes perfect sense. So that's my feedback on your presentation tonight. I want to hand out to my fellow council members and to the mayor some highlights that I made from our city code, and just take a short time to go through some of the things I highlighted, because I think it's worth having a discussion here. I think our major difficulty with this proposed development has been with how it meshes with city code and with the feelings of our residents. On the front page here are some of the very general statements regarding our commercial zone. And the first one is, it's intended that development within the zone shall be characterized by a harmonious grouping of commercial stores and shops. So I think clearly the emphasis is on storage and shops there. Down at the bottom of the page, about prohibited uses, it says that uses of land that are not expressly permitted within a zone are hereby declared to be expressly prohibited. and neither the Planning Commission, Board of Adjustment, nor the Zoning Administrator shall permit a use within a zone that is not expressly permitted by the terms of this title. That seems really clear, but in that same paragraph, it says that there may be exceptions made by the Planning Commission or City Council pursuant to authority that they have. This is an area where we need to clean up our city code. It's saying two things at the same time. It's saying we have absolutely no ability to make any changes to our zoning, but we also have the ability to make exceptions. We really, really need to clean up that language there and decide what our authority exactly is with respect to the commercial zone. On the back page of that, I've excerpted some things from the use requirements for that commercial area, and this is also in our city code. This is not our development guidelines. And there are, again, some confusing things here. It lists assisted living in a convalescence home as something that is allowed. It's a conditional use permit in the area. But our definition of assisted living facility is sort of taken from the 90s when the vision was you'd have a facility with nurses on hand, doctors available, lots of services for residents. Congregate care facilities weren't really a thing when our code was written. The only other mention of residential units is residential attached units, which is thinking more like apartment-style housing. And that's where this clause that I've referenced a number of times comes in, where it says that residential use can only be on the second story and less than 50% of the building. So our code really doesn't make any mention at all of congregate care facilities of this type. I've talked with staff, and they've argued that maybe this would fall under assisted living. There is a clause in our development guidelines that says that anything similar to something in the conditional use should be treated as if it was the same. And so you can make an argument that this is similar to assisted living. But I myself would make an argument that no, it's actually more similar to residential attached housing. It's more similar to an apartment. This is, again, an area where our city code really needs to be cleaned up. We need to make a decision about where congregate care fits with the permitted uses in that zone. I'm hearing a lot of residents saying they don't want it there. I would imagine if we tried to allow it there, we're going to have some uproar. So we ought to maybe clarify our code and say it's expressly prohibited if that's what we intend to do. And just for information purposes, the very final page is a senior housing overlay zone ordinance from Pleasant Grove City. They have explicitly mentioned congregate care housing developments in their code. They spell out exactly which zones you may build congregate care facilities in. They even go down to the amount of density allowed, 24 units per acre. They talk about the amount of open space, which has to be 30%, quite a large amount. They talk about parking, which should be 2.5 parking stalls. For a single family, but only 1.25 for congregate care, which is within the range we're talking about. And so all the things that Mr. Young has presented would fit really well in a senior housing overlay zone as defined in Pleasant Grove's code. It's just completely missing from our code. I think our code needs to be updated to either allow or disallow this sort of thing. My reading of code is that it's not allowed in the zone. Staff feels differently, and certainly there may be differing opinions on the council.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, I actually have a couple of comments. I'll actually start with one that you just brought up. Yes, I agree that our city code definitely does need to be updated. However, since Blue Line is currently in the process and going through all of this, I would find it very difficult for us to go in and try to change all of our code to either allow or disallow them to come in, because they are already in this process. So we have to go by what is currently in our code, not changes that we possibly could make to our code. So, I mean, that would be very tricky at best to even try to attempt something like that. I don't think I would be comfortable trying to do that at this given point.
No, I'd agree. I think this has to be done once this is resolved.
Right. So going back a little bit, 2 years ago when I came onto the city council, within probably a couple of months of being a council member, I dove right into the commercial development, because that was actually one of the things that I ran on, was being able to help our commercial district and grow our city in our commercial district. When I first started looking at all of this, I mean, we had discussions with a lot of sit-down type restaurants, a lot of developers, and I was like, oh, this is great. We'll have tons of commercial area. We'll be able to bring a ton of businesses here. But after we started talking to everybody and talking to different restaurants,
everybody was really hesitant about it. And everybody that we talked to was like, no, you guys really aren't a destination that people want to go to. Part of the reason for that is that we only can draw populations from three sides of our city. We're bordered on the east side by a mountain, which means nobody will ever be able to live up there. If you go look at areas like the Meadows or South Salt Lake, Jordan Commons, things like that, they pull from all four sides, so they can pull a broader range of residents than what you can just on two or three sides. So very quickly I started to realize that what I once thought was a huge commercial piece of property that we would be able to bring commercial businesses into was actually a lot more limited than I thought it was. So over the last 2 years in talking to various developers, general contractors, land developers, quite a range of people that are a lot more skilled at this than I am, everybody that I've talked to keeps indicating that our property is not prime commercial real estate. The reason for that, well, one of the reasons for that is that we don't have the frontage and the capacity to draw the type of business volume that a lot of retail establishments want. The highest use or the best possibility that we have for commercial businesses is the direct frontage on 4800 West. A lot of people keep saying, well, we need to put commercial on all of this. And if you go back even further, back where this congregate care facility is listed or designed, that is probably the least likely place you would ever put a commercial business. And everybody I've talked to says, there's no way I would ever put a commercial business back there because you don't have the view, you don't have the traffic, you don't have that visibility that you do on 4800 West. And what business wants to go in the very back behind somebody else where you can't be seen? If you take Lexington Heights, which is the dental offices and the professional offices that sit right off the roundabout, they have a hard time keeping those full. So even businesses that are more specialized, things like dental offices, lawyers, professional type businesses, they're having a hard time keeping those in there. So yeah, I mean, we could try to put up some Class B or Class C retail or business offices, an office park or whatever. But we're still going to have a hard time even getting those type of businesses back in this area of our commercial district. So over the last couple of months, I just had a hard time trying to envision what we could possibly do with that area that would actually get the draw that everybody keeps talking about bringing in commercial to that particular piece of property. And one of the comments tonight was made that commercial brings commercial. And I will disagree with that because commercial does not always bring commercial. Just because we have commercial in that area does not mean that commercial is going to come to the very back piece of our property. This has happened in a lot of other cases, not just us. But just because there's commercial businesses there doesn't mean, oh, great, all of a sudden we're going to be able to put anything we want in there. One of the hugest competitions we have is Walmart. Walmart puts small businesses out of sorry, I'm losing my voice. Walmart puts small businesses out of business all the time. Most small businesses that have goods and services that are similar to Walmart won't even touch Walmart within probably a 2 to 5 mile radius because they can't last. They can't provide the goods and services in the time or at the cost that Walmart can. So we have a very strict and a very kind of elite area that we have to look at, and we have to try to find something that works. So I don't know that there's one perfect scenario or one perfect option that will go in there, because everybody's going to have their own opinion. Everybody's going to have their idea of what the ideal situation is. But the way I see it, that is not prime ideal real estate for commercial development. So for me, I'm looking for something else that's viable that we can still get the tax base off of, that we can still bring residents to our city and still increase our city and provide a higher level of service and quality of life for our residents.
I'll just make a quick comment to that, which is that Walmart sits back fairly far from 4800 West and yet still got developed. And so I guess I'm not as skeptical as you are. I recognize your skepticism. I agree we don't have as many rooftops as I'd like to have in the area. But I do think there's still potential for that area, even though it's set back.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. But you also look at retail, or if you look at Walmart, their size of retail is a lot bigger than a little mom and pop shop that's 4,000 square feet, because they provide a lot of services, a lot of products, a wide range at a cheap cost. And people are willing to drive from the other side of our city to Walmart because they're getting cheap products and services. To a mom and pop shop, they're never going to be able to compete with that.
Well, first, I do also want to say thank you to Doug, because I think over the past year, you have made a lot of changes based upon the feedback that you've gotten from council, especially from residents, and I appreciate that. I think that being able to work with you in that capacity has been very beneficial. I do have some of the same concerns that Mr. Zapala has. I hadn't been made aware of the city code concerns that he had until recently, and I think I agree with that needs to be cleaned up. But to me, the most important thing that I'm looking at is the feedback that I'm getting from residents, because when I sit at that table, that's who I represent, and I can't ignore 176 people who are signing a petition saying this isn't what we want. And so while I appreciate all the changes that have been made, and I think the facility is beautiful, I recognize that my role is to move forward with what our residents are asking us to do. And I just haven't had this number, even close to this number of residents coming forward saying, yes, we want to do this. I'm getting, you know, quite a few emails from residents to this petition. We've been to a few cottage meetings and neighborhood meetings, and everyone that I have talked to, with the exception of about five people, have been opposed to any type of a building in the commercial area that is primarily residential. They have said that they would like to see something, if there was going to be residential, that it's secondary to the commercial, so the main level is all commercial, the second floor is residential, and that it's no taller than that. And so, yes, they're concerned with city code. I agree with Trent that this isn't prime commercial area. These residents that I talked to have, when we express those concerns, have most of them have said, well, we're fine with it just being empty. We don't want this high density here. And so I just don't feel like there's any way for me to ignore that feedback from residents and move forward, knowing that we have a huge chunk of residents who just don't want this type of high density in our commercial area.
You want to say something?
Yeah, I want to say just a few things.
Go ahead.
I know it's getting late, but thank you, Doug, Corey. And, you know, I want to thank some of our planning commissioners are here as well, and I think they've done a terrific job. And I don't see any problems the way some of the people, Daniel especially, sees on our code. I think our code should be interpreted, because one of the first things it says is, unless approved by the Planning Commission or the City Council. So I like the fact that we have some leeway in our code. I don't think it should ever be restricted to the point where we're limiting absolutely every little thing. I would just like to say to, and maybe I run in a few different circles, but I've had a number of people say they support the project to me. Having said that, I understand there's a lot that have opposed it. I've also wondered, those that oppose it have been, if really a lot of the information I've heard out there is, I've seen a lot of flaws in the information that is given to people. I think there's absolutely no way we could get a higher tax revenue on any commercial property on that piece higher than what is being proposed. And until someone can prove to me otherwise, I'll stand by that statement. So, but nevertheless, it's not all about money. It's also about pleasing the residents and the people that live here. And I think that, I don't want to generalize, but I think of all the people that signed this petition that I read tonight, I just wondered what information they were given as far as information and what they were signing. I think if the petition came to me and says, would you like a five-story, apartment complex in our commercial zone, I'd say no. But I think if all the information was actually given correctly to them, they may change their mind. And also, having said that, we live in a country that
property owners have rights, and we have the right, and they have the right to present something to the city. It appears this is going down. I feel like a lot of effort has been spent by our own planning commission, our city council, to a point where we've wasted a lot of time and effort on this. And if this is really the case, I think we should have been more upfront with the property owners from the get-go. Having said that, everyone says this is residential. I really feel like, from what they're proposing, this is a commercial venture. This is commercial. They are renting rooms, and this is not for sale. This is a commercial venture. They've done the studies. I've heard a lot of people say, "Well, what happens to the property if it goes into disrepair?" Really? Do you really think that someone would propose putting $19 million to $24 million in a project that they really feel like, "Oh, you know, in a couple of years, if it doesn't fill up, we'll just walk away from it"? Yeah, I think that's sort of ludicrous, honestly. And having said that, I would say probably the majority of the people in our city feel like if there's one thing government should do, is stay out of people's lives, certainly give direction. But I think most of the people would say government's role is less government is better than more government. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have guidelines, and I think we have guidelines. I think Planning Commission approved a project that could be viable. If it goes down, that's the way it is. I mean, you take those risks. But I think, and I'll stand by my comments, that I think this is a good project. I think it would be a benefit for the city. I hate the fact that it's exclusionary, and it's sort of the NIMBY, not in my backyard kind of thing, when we could potentially have 200, 300 more residents that enjoy the beauty and the benefits that we as current residents do in the city. Having said that, I don't know what the next step is. Thanks.
Okay.
Can I make a few more comments?
Sorry.
I just had to respond to a few things Mike said, just because I want to be sure we're all on the same page. The residents I've talked to who signed the petition, I've talked to a number of them, have all been fairly well informed. I haven't heard any of them talk about the economics and saying, "Man, if we just had $30,000 more revenue, then I'd do it." It really does come down to the size of the building, the density, the scale of the building. They knew it was down to three stories. They still didn't want the building here. I appreciate your desire to have more residents enjoy Cedar Hills. I think it's a good desire. But these residents didn't want them all clustered into such a small space. Like, they might feel differently if it was single family homes. Regarding whether we wasted the time of the developers, I hope not. Mm-hmm. I've expressed from day one when we've had meetings with the city council these same thoughts. I've read from city code, I think, every time you've come. I hope it hasn't been that boring. So hopefully you haven't felt misled. I think I've been fairly upfront with my concerns each time we've met. And then regarding whether this project is residential or commercial in nature, I think there are lots of different kinds of residential. By your definition, I would worry that you would classify an apartment as commercial, whereas I would classify that as residential. For me, the defining line is whether people are living there. Whether it's leased or sold is sort of immaterial. For me, residential is people are living there. And in this facility, you really would have a lot of people living there, and that, in my mind, makes it residential. Our code is ambiguous with respect to congregate care facilities. In my mind, because the code explicitly says other uses are not permitted, and because congregate care use isn't listed, that I just don't feel like I can approve it. And I'd also like to agree with Jenny that for me, ultimately, the wrangling over the code and all these other things I mentioned are secondary with respect to residents are overwhelmingly negative in respect to this project. I've had about 95% against it for me too. And as a representative, I just can't support it when I've got that much negative feedback from residents, because that's why I'm here.
So I actually have just a couple of other comments that I'd like to make, just kind of with that point.
So you said kind of your driving factor as to whether it's residential or commercial is whether people are staying there. So would you classify a hotel or a motel as residential?
Well, that's a good question. That's a gray area. I'd probably classify it as commercial because it is short term. And so a hotel is very short term. It's, you know, days or weeks.
Can I just add to that? I think we need to be careful not to get caught up too much on debating whether it's commercial or residential, because the county gets to decide that. We don't. And it sounds like they've already said it would be residential. So it doesn't really matter what we think. It's what the county thinks.
That's right.
Thank you, Daniel. I appreciate your statements. My only question on that would be, would you consider the Charleston commercial or residential?
Residential,
and it's actually allowed in that sub-district of the commercial zone. It does allow assisted living facilities in that particular portion, which is on the...
And most of this, the Smarts property, is in the same zone?
No, it's not. It's in the same zone, but a different sub-district. So there's an office district, which is where Lexington Heights and Charleston are, and that does allow both assisted living facilities and independent residents.
I think it splits. I think there's some of both, isn't there? I looked at it. I thought it was right
at the road was my understanding of it. And that right at the road across the street is the office neighborhood mixed use office retail. And there it's not allowed, from my reading of the code at least. But the maps do need to be updated.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys have enjoyed this. I mean, this is a great debate, right? And so this is what councils are supposed to do. They're supposed to debate weighty issues, and I take comfort in the fact that that issues are not always unanimous. They need to be debated and full-throated debated, and I feel like we had some of that tonight, and I appreciate all the council members' participation in that. And so I'll give my thoughts, and then we will move on to our next item. So one thing that I've really appreciated about working with Doug from the beginning is that he was willing to do all of our commercial zone. And that's important to me. So I've heard the same things that Mr. Augustus has heard from commercial real estate people, that Cedar Hills may not be the best commercial zone there is. With all due respect to them, I take what they say with a grain of salt, just because some of them saw our commercial zone for the first time when they came to see me. And so what they don't get is that Alpine has no place to shop and eat, really. Highland has very little. Parts of AF and PG would be closer to our commercial zone. Cedar Hills has all of our residents. So you really have parts of five cities that would make our commercial zone successful. So even though the mountain does take away one side, we have parts of four other cities that supplement that. So I have always thought that we have the potential to have a really successful commercial zone. Now, if this doesn't happen, that may mean that we wait 5 years. I'm not very happy about that, and I hope that's not the case. But as a city, that's something that, you know, that we need to realize, is that if it doesn't work out with Blue Line, then we're going to wait. And there's pros and cons to that, because I hear a lot that how great the commercial tax would be, which is true. Sales tax helps a city like ours. But Cedar Hills is doing just fine financially, you know. So, but it would help. So, thank you for coming. And I wish there was all 173 people that signed this petition that were here as well. It's a lot more meaningful when people show up as opposed to signatures. It really is. So that's really what all I have to say. This is a discussion item only. We're not voting on anything tonight. So thank you very much for being here.
Can I actually ask one question, Mayor?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of for the council, just to get your feedback. One of the things that was mentioned tonight was an economic feasibility study. I don't know if that was the right term that you used. That's what I'm familiar with. So I'm wondering, if we went through a process like that, is it possible that we are wrong with what our commercial zone should be or what it was intended to be 10 years ago? And if we went through an economic feasibility study that we had true experts in the field come out and say, look, this is what we've looked at. We've looked at all the surrounding areas. This is what our recommendation is. What would that do for us? Would that give us more direction? Would that be a benefit to us? Would that help us through this process?
So in my mind, that would be really fantastic, provided it took into account all of the potential. The feasibility studies I've seen will look at, for example, if we put in the development south of Lone Peak, then what's going to happen to commercial? Or if we develop this facility, what will happen? I'd really like them to take a look at holistically over the whole area, all of the different planned developments, what would that do to commercial? If at that point they still said, look, this area here, you're really not going to see what you're hoping for, I'd actually be amenable to changing the zoning. I'd like to have that discussion with residents. I suspect it wouldn't turn out to be zoned for dense apartment buildings, but maybe there would be some townhomes or some other kind of development that would be there that would be a nice transition into the commercial, and I'd be perfectly open to that.
Well, and what I'm thinking is, if we got the same company that did the study for the area south of Lone Peak, if they came back and said, look, your commercial area is just not going to happen based on everything that they're doing south, like in the, I can't think of what the term is, all the area south of Lone Peak, clear down to the Temple Developmental Center. If they looked at all of that, they looked at American Fork, Cedar Hills, Highland Alpine. I mean, if they looked at that and said, look, your commercial area is just not viable. If they came back and said that and said, you need to look at something else, then I would think we need to look at what is our other option. I mean, what can we do with this area? Because it doesn't matter if we wait 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, it may never truly be a viable commercial area.
No, I agree. I think that's worth doing.
We need more soccer fields.
I would agree with that, though. Like Daniel, I would want that resident input, because I've attended two neighborhood meetings with a lot of these residents who have signed this petition. I've talked to some of them on the phone. I've received emails from them, and I've asked that question. I've brought the fact that it's not prime commercial area, and my impression from talking to those residents is, even if it means nothing is there, they still don't change their opinion on high density there. So I think it's probably worth looking into. I don't know if it's worth it for Doug to be the one to look into that, knowing how residents feel, but I don't know if it changes the opinion of many of these residents as far as high density.
Yeah, and I would add,
right,
because I'm a representative of the people, that I have to add that whenever I ask people what they would really like to see there, assuming commercial wasn't going to happen, usually the answer I get is, let's trade land with the Smarts and then use the area by the roundabout to build a seasonal pool, open Memorial to Labor Day. That's often the response I get.
Right. And see, when I've talked to people, I mean, yes, there may be 176 signatures on this page, but we also have, probably 5,000 or 6,000 adults in our city that haven't responded. So that pulls some weight for me also is, yeah, we may have 176, but we also have 5,000 that we haven't got feedback from. And a lot of times people, when they're happy with the status quo and are happy with the way things are going, tend not to get involved. People, when it affects them and they're upset about something and they're emotional about it, tend to have a stronger response. And being involved with our HOA for 3 years and president, I can tell you that is 100% the case, at least in our neighborhood, is people don't come out unless they have a strong feeling. And it's usually, and I'll say this, unfortunately, it's usually a negative response to it. A lot of times people don't come out with the warm, fuzzy, hey, yeah, let's go ahead and do this, because it's just the status quo. They're happy with the way things are going.
Sure. And in my dream, we would have a really easy way to verify identity of people online and have them make their voices known to us.
Agreed.
I was going to say, I agree with that. And I think that's the hard thing, is that when we're at this table making decisions, the only feedback that we can go off of is the feedback that we've received. I mean, we can assume
that the rest of the residents are opposed to it or for it. We just don't know. And so I think that's a struggle we've dealt with. I think that's a struggle every city deals with, is trying to get enough resident input when you're making these big decisions. And I don't think that there's a great way to fix that. And so I can only go off of the people who are contacting me.
Let me just make one comment. I've really gotten to know you guys. And I'll tell you what, the Planning Commission, Glenn Dodge and some of these guys, they're really amazing. They really are. And you got a tough job to do. I've gone to a lot of cities before, and as you know, I develop all over the place. But you got a tough job. They don't pay you guys enough. If they even pay you at all, I don't know. But I appreciated the input from the residents, and I appreciate your honesty. I feel for the smarts, you know, I really do. A couple of comments were made of, you know, maybe that property could be a park. Maybe if the city has some property that they could exchange, then maybe that would make great soccer fields down there. That might be an idea. It might be an idea to do this study. I think if I were in your city, I'd do an economic study and do it like Daniel suggested. Do a global. When the county property fills in, when this fills in, when this all fills in, I think it's only fair to the Smart family. They feel like they're on hold. And I think that especially when it'll cost maybe $5,000, do a global. Take the zoning of what's in there and how many residents are going to be in there. Well, how many people are going to be there? So that you can do an accurate study for the future. And then if there's a possibility, I think, of the city having other properties someplace else of comparable value, there could be an exchange made where then the city could hold that property and the smarts could move on. They're all getting upper in their years now, and they really look at this as being something that's kind of pushed on them that, hey, you know, they allowed the Walmart to go in, which generates $1 million, I'm told, a year for the city, and now they're ready to kind of move on, and they're kind of feel like they're straddled. And so please, if there's a way that you can use this property for soccer fields or something, and if you have an exchange, that's something that we could look at to maybe develop that property, exchange it, then you've got the whole retail center or control of that or soccer fields. So if you look at those avenues, and then the other thing is to do this economic analysis rather than send out a survey. Henry Ford said, if I asked people how to improve their transportation, he said, they would have told me, sell me a faster horse. And so a lot of the surveys and things, they're great. They kind of get input. But I'd take that $10,000 and I'd cut it in half to spend $5,000, get that economic study done, because that's the most viable thing that you can do in the city. And so just those two things, if you consider that and give us a response back on that. Appreciate it, but it was great meeting you and talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, last item on the agenda this evening is a discussion of SR 146 Canyon Road. We already did discuss this a little bit in the work session, but I'm happy to talk about it a little bit more if you guys want to. Any questions?
I'm assuming nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. So, Mr. Geddes, Mr. Zappala, you guys want to talk about SR 146?
Sure, of
course. Sure. If not, then we can adjourn. We did talk about it in work session.
If nothing's changed, then I don't think we need to discuss it.
Then I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Sorry, second? Did you second?
I think Mike did.
Whoever.
Somebody seconded.
There's a second out there.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you.